Blog Talk Radio.
BAMS Radio from high atop Bluff Park, your box seat to Bama.
Another Wednesday night, another evening of BAMS Radio. You've got the bird. You have got the legend. Legend, how are you?
I'm doing good, bird man. Doing good. Looking forward good. To another great show.
And we got the Rock Watts, who as always is the spine of the show, holding us up for truth, justice, and the American way out of Mobile, Alabama. Rock, how are you?
I'm pretty good. The chat room is open, and we have open phone lines. The spine is actually straight for once. It's a nice new feeling.
Well, that's because you do it right. You've got the board, and you're actually making things happen. Man, do we have a lot to talk about tonight. I don't know if you guys saw earlier today the ruling by the court system that the schools and students, not schools, but student athletes at schools now have the endorsed right to unionize. Now, I'll tell you what, you know, I've got about three soliloquies tonight, and I don't know if I'm going to use one of them on this, but, you know, guys, what do you think? Is this a shot right across the NCAA's bow or what?
Well, I absolutely, I do. I think it's important to break what has kind of become the monopoly that the NCAA has had on college athletics. I mean, yes, they you want a governing body over such things, but as college athletics has monetized, perhaps well, obviously with no better spot than the upcoming 4-team college football playoff. I mean, that's a $1 billion TV deal, and you'll have people asking, why aren't players getting some of this? And you can debate back and forth about if they deserve it or not. I'm not gonna get that conversation going yet. But I think it's big to show that the students or the athletes have power. I think it will have something. It'll have an effect on the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. So, you know, I think this is just kind of, I guess you could call it the first shoe to drop in the snowball that's becoming the avalanche against the NCAA.
I'll take umbrage to that, and I'll fire back at you that this is actually the second shoe to drop, and the first shoe to drop was the Cam Newton case. And the NCAA's bungling and the way they handle that opened the door for stuff like this to happen. Legend, what do you think?
I just wonder how long before we have our first strike.
Well, you know, there's a lot that goes along with it. When you get right down to it, I mean, the kids are getting paid because they're getting a college tuition that I certainly, when I went to college, didn't get. So there's a monetary value to what they are, what's happening with them as we speak. Now, where this starts to fall apart, guys, is let's use Mark Ingram as a for instance, and Mark Ingram becomes the poster boy for EA Sports NCAA football. Should any money go in Mark Ingram's pocket? Well, you know what? I don't know. Let's take it one step further. Not just to Mark Ingram, but how about all the artwork that is provided by Daniel Moore, Steve Skipper et al., Priscilla Wadsworth. I could start naming artists. And these folks make money off of the fact that these, you know, here are these kids in school, and the university certainly is making money to a degree off of that. Of course, I think Daniel Moore just last week won his case with the University of Alabama, which, by the way, Bill Battle started that little shit pile, and that's my second diatribe. But, when you see schools making the hundreds of millions of dollars of profit, and there's an argument in that. If you're not making a profit, do we owe these kids anything back? Well, I would say no. If you want to unionize, then you know what? You're part of the system. And that goes up and it goes down. But if you're in part of the system and it's making, you know, $320 million a year, then maybe there should be, or there is a endorsement for this whole union thing, guys.
Well, I totally agree with you, Bird. And I mean, there's a lot of issues tied to this, no doubt. I've seen a piece this week on ESPN about one player who was a big-time athlete coming out of high school. He got injured his first year, and they didn't renew his scholarship his second year. So, I mean, there's a lot of angles that you could go with this, but I totally agree with you. The NCAA has definitely been put on notice. And I have to believe that they put your image on the front of a game that's going to sell millions of games, you should have a right to some of the money that comes off of it. I see this working out because you know there are going to be some big-time lawyers that gets tied into this, and this could revolutionize the game in a way that we haven't seen in a long, long time.
Well, and, you know, the thing is, too, guys, it's not just football. This would accrue to all NCAA sports. So, you know, right now the billion-dollar monopoly that's going on with the NCAA tournament, and what a travesty that is. The giant show, and a great show, but the giant show that's been put on for CBS and the attenuating networks, the TNTs and the TBSs and the True TVs, et cetera, all the guys that have carried this thing, and the schools are getting paid, the conferences are getting paid, and the kids are doing the work. And the last time I looked, this is not 1850. You know, I hate to say it, but we don't have guys up on a slave block in shackles. And that's a little bit of the way that at least the students are being treated. Now, again, the other side of the argument is they're getting their education paid for. They're getting room and board. Their health care, Thomas, you and I talked about that before the show, is paid for by the university. But what happens, again, if you've got the kid, like Legend brings up, that comes in, theoretically gets a four-year scholarly to Michigan State U, and I'm not singling out any one school, but what happens when they blow out their knee? And then all of a sudden, is that just are they chattel mortgage, or is there's nothing to basically protect them in the fact that, gosh, I signed on with this school with the idea that I was going to get an education?
Well, there was a similar situation in the NFL a few years ago about former players that was not getting paid. I think it kind of correlates a little bit, not entirely. But in that situation, former players that had played in the NFL were suffering from concussion syndromes and so forth, and there was absolutely no fund whatsoever to cover these expenses. And eventually the NFL had to give in. I think this is an issue way overdue. I remember bluntly a few years ago being at Arby's with an Alabama wide receiver that didn't have no money in his pocket to buy a hamburger, and I offered to buy him a combo meal, but it was a violation of NCAA rules, and I thought that was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard in my life. I could buy anybody else in Arby's a combo meal, but I couldn't buy the Alabama wide receiver a combo meal. So I think the NCAA has rode this donkey long enough, and I agree with the players totally. It's time they get paid. Now, how much they get paid? The question is, does Julio Jones make more than a third stringer? You know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, come on, guys. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there should be an equitability help me on that, Rock. That's not even a word, is it? Equitability?
Is that the
there
word
should
for
be
tonight?
A certain amount of equity in any sort of business dealing is what I think you're going for.
Yeah, a certain amount of equity. And if you're a walk-on third string guy, you certainly are not going to make the amount of money that somebody that is you're going to be the poster child for the school. And let's face it, at Alabama right now, we could name, let's say, four poster children for the football program. And you guys may or may not agree with me, but I'd say you got T.J. Yeldon, who's probably a poster child for the school. You probably got Amari Cooper. Trying to think on the defense, who I would put up this year as the poster kid for the defense.
DePriest is the early one.
DePriest would be the early one. But you've got, like I say, three or four guys that we had this conversation, if you remember, a year ago. We said if one player goes down, if there's any one single player on offense and one on defense, if either one of these gets hurt, who would it be that would have the most impact negatively on the Alabama year? And I think all of us came up and said, well, let's see, A.J. McCarron, and C.J. And so just with that, all of a sudden those are the two poster children for the program. And then, again, there has to be a way to remunerate these kids above and beyond what they're not being remunerated at all. I mean, it's a joke for us to sit and say, oh, yeah, well, they're getting a $100,000 education. Yeah, but, when I went to school, the university did not own me. I went to class. I did my best to do my studies. And then the rest of the time was mine. And unfortunately, under the auspices of the NCAA, that's not the case with these student-athletes. You were owned under the eagle eye of the NCAA by that university for however long you decide to put on that jersey. And I'm going to tell you, it's just, okay, if that's the case, then pay me for it. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being a harbinger of things that there are probably people out there in Alabama land, the old curmudgeons, that are slapping their foreheads going, well, that's just not the way it is in my time. Well,
Bird should be a lawyer, Rock.
Oh, man. I don't know about that.
No, I'm too all over the place, guys. It's up and down. Now, here's the second thing I'm going to throw on the wall. I don't know if we've got any calls yet, but Rock, you've heard me enough, and I think Legend has too. I really have had a big question mark over the hiring of Bill Battle as the our athletic director, and I pretty much have a huge distaste for most ADs. I think ADs are about as worthless as teats on board until you came to Mal Moore, and then Mal Moore took a fairly average career with his hirings and firings and completely salvaged it and put together kind of a dream team of coaches down at Alabama, except for Coach Grant, and really had done yeoman duty. What Mal was smart enough to do, and I'll lead up to something, and I'm coming to a point, so you guys hang with me here. Hang with me. What Mal was smart enough to do in Saban's contract was basically say, I'm taking off the crown and the mantle of the AD, and I'm handing the running and the leadership of this program to you, Nick Saban. And whatever you want to have happen down there, if it's within the lines of the law and the auspices of the NCAA, and you keep our nose out of trouble, then you are allowed to do, and you can do. Now, a little bird has flown in and sat on my shoulder this week and told me that Brother Battle is none too happy with Coach Saban for hiring Lane Kiffin. Now, I'm going to let you guys take a deep breath on that.
Did this little bird tell you why?
I think part of the reason is he didn't kiss Battle's ass to get the okay to do it. Number one, okay, so there's that AD's ego coming in that Mal was smart enough to pass off. And number two, the second thing is the quote-unquote perhaps improprieties that Kiffin has brought with him with the NCAA that might put them under yet more NCAA scrutiny. Well, Christ in a cradle battle, where the have you been the past 5 years while we were getting cornholed by your former university, University of Tennessee, and Phil Fulmer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? You know what, guys? I've got to tell you, I've got a little bit of a case of the butt, and it's getting bigger and bigger, and Battle hadn't been there long enough, but I really, really, really am if he's got a case of the ass for Saban, I'm going to send some KY jelly down to the University of Tuscaloosa and put it in a box for Bill Battle. Let him smother his feet up with it because, Bill, get over it. Well, you don't run the frickin' football program at Alabama. Nick Saban does. And there's not a fan in this state that will allow you, Bill Battle, to come in and cornhole anything Nick Saban does.
Well, I just to jump onto your point, hubris has been the downfall of a lot of big things in history, and that's exactly what that sounds like, and that pisses me off as an Alabama fan. Addendum to that, why the hell are you going to shoot the goose that's laying the golden egg? I mean, Nick Saban is paying Bill Battle's salary 100 times over, and
hubris.
Exactly, but it blows my mind. But anyway,
well, I understand something too. Bill Battle doesn't need the Alabama salary. Bill Battle is wealthy into his own right. So here you've got a guy that really doesn't need the job anyway. And it's when I try to define the difference between a statesman and a politician. The true great people that are leaders in this country from a political standpoint are not politicians. They're people that put politics to the side, and they're statesmen that are going to do the best for what's happening for their constituents, you and I, the guys paying the taxes. I really, if any of this is true, and I have a sneaky suspicion that there may be some groundlings of truth to all this, again, I'm going to shout loud and clear, Battle, the KY jelly is on its way. Slap it on your butt. You don't need to come out until next Groundhog's Day, because I think that's when basketball starts again. And we'll already have had probably 10 losses under Grant's tenure while we watch Bruce Pearl put another 10 up on the board. You know what? He needs to get over the Lane Kiffin hire, because the kids seem to like him. I like what Lane's bringing to the table. What we're hearing out of spring practice is nothing but positive. And you know, Lane's taking a very low profile down at T-Town. He's, you know what he's doing? He's put on a pair of baggy gray sweatpants. He's gone out in the field, and he's bringing some of that gray matter that sits between our two in our cortex, between those fleshy appendages on each side. And he's putting it on the field, damn it. And he's adapting plays that the kids can understand, that, by the way, are going to take some of these five-star kids that stood around with their hands in their pockets for a year and put them and make them involved in the play time. So anyway, you know, guys, I'm sorry if I started the show with a rant, actually a double rant, one on the NCAA and one on Bill Battle, but that's what happens when I miss a show for a week.
Well, I do want to ask, are you feeling better from your little health stuff?
Let's put it this way. Heart attacks suck, the big one.
Well, there is that.
Oh, my God, Rock, I tell you what, this is when you want to run around, and of course, I've never been much of a smoker, but what I think is happening is, because I think people are fairly familiar that I've been going through chemotherapy and this, that, and the other, and it's just my body is saying, okay, I'm tired. But, yeah, I ended up in the situation, you know, going to bed the other night and eating Tums for the tummy, and it was like somebody had put their hand inside my chest and started squeezing real hard. And I'm going, I need another Tums for the tummy. And then I started taking, well, that's not working. Let's step up to Pepto-Bismol, because this is the worst damn indigestion I ever had. At 2 in the morning, they finally put my butt in the little EMT machine and took me down to Brookwood, where they are terrific, and, you know, popped me with some nitroglycerin and a little morphine, a little this and a little that, and man, I'm as good as new now. So,
well, good. Let's shift gears a little bit. We actually have Imand on hold, and I'm going to make him live. Legend, you want to take this one?
Sure.
Imand, you are live on BAMS Radio. What you got for us this evening?
Well, I'm actually live in the capital city, and the sun is set, and looking at the little garden scout.
cloudy area here. Bird, it's great to hear you, my man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. It's good to have you on BAMS too.
I think the world of you. And I know Malcolm, and Malcolm is a great guy. And man, he's been keeping me up on you. He's been keeping me posted. And
I appreciate it. Malcolm is one of my dear friends, and I appreciate you keeping up with us. But it's an honor to have you on the show, because it's, even though I don't always agree with what you say, I love the passion you bring. You bring the lumber to Auburn, that's for sure.
My wife doesn't agree with all the passion I bring. Legend, how you doing?
Hey, man, how you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing well. I turned on the radio and got to your site, and I was listening to Daryl, ramble on last week, and I just had to go. When Daryl gets started talking, you just have to just put the phone down, walk away, and come back and pick it up and say yep, and put it down, come back, walk away, and say I hear you. Because the dude gets trenched, and you can't have a conversation with him. He just gets out there, and it's amazing. I didn't know that somebody could actually do that and still survive, but he does. I agree with you totally on the Bill Battlehauer. I've never been a big Bill Battle fan. It's not because he's of Alabama. It's because of what he did to all the schools when he went out and copyrighted all their logos and stuff and made billions of dollars.
Yep.
And it's kind of underhand. I appreciate the creativity, and I appreciate the thought, but he's got more money than he'll ever spend in his life, and it's time to just turn all that stuff loose and just let the schools have it. And maybe he has, but when Mal Moore died, I thought Mal Moore was a Bama man from the get-go. I mean, he was raised there, behind the scenes with Bryant and everything, and I think he loved that school, and I think that's what David Housel brought to Auburn. They were homer as they could be, but they loved their schools, and I think that they both did an outstanding job as ADs, and it's because of who they were, the kind of people they were. I'm not sure on Bill Battle. I agree with you on the Tennessee connection.
Well, it makes me nervous. Go ahead, Fledge, and I'm sorry. I don't mean to step in on you.
No, that's all right, but I'm bringing up a good point. Bill Battle really is an outsider. Am I wrong, Bert?
Go ahead.
I know Kerry Clark would argue this, that he's a Bama guy, but I've never felt he was a Bama guy. I've always thought equated Bill Battle with Tennessee, and you know how I love Tennessee. It's hard for me to kind of put this all in my head. And then, when Coach Pearl was available, I would love to know from an insider's perspective whether or not Bill Battle even called Coach Pearl just to have a discussion. And I have no idea. This is a speculation. By the way, man, you guys hired, without a doubt, one of the best motivators, one of the best floor coaches, one of the best minds in college basketball at all. And the only way that I would say, keep Grant, is that if we meet you guys twice next year and make the NCAA tournament. And we could all be betters right now, but I can bet you money it ain't happening. I mean, he will off the floor.
I was listening to Daryl's call talking about Auburn being in the championship and all that. Auburn's got a long way to go before they even get to the NCAA tournament. But what hiring Pearl does, he brings that excitement that Sonny Smith and Sanderson had in the SEC. Alabama and Auburn were never the elite basketball programs in this conference. We had Arkansas, Florida's come on, Kentucky's always been there, Mississippi State's played some, everybody's had some hit and misses. But Auburn and Alabama have always been kind of right there in the middle of things. And, I just appreciate the competition. Basketball is a great game. It's a continuous game. There's a lot of action. And it's just going back and forth. And I love the SEC basketball after the bowl seasons have wound down, and then the tournament comes along. And I just got to the point that I didn't even fill out a bracket this year. I'm so disconnected with basketball. It's just damn horrible in this state. because there's two teams I'm always going to watch. I'm going to watch Auburn, and I'm going to watch Alabama, and it's because that's what we talk about, and that's what we know. And it's just been pitiful. And I'm telling you, I could not believe that Alabama did not fire Grant and take Pearl. And I was really surprised that Auburn was able to get him.
Major kudos to the folks down on the plains because it's you picked up one of the best of the best. And you know, while we're on the subject, and just out of curiosity, Thomas, do we have anybody on hold?
We actually do.
You know what? I'm going to shut my big mouth, and I think I know who this caller is. Thomas, go ahead and bring our caller on, and I know I-Man and Legend will both enjoy the caller.
Oh,
joining us now,
we always do.
Absolutely. Joining us now on BAMS Radio is Phyllis from Mulga. How are you doing this evening, Miss Phyllis?
I'm doing fine. Hey, I-Man and Legend.
How you doing?
Hey, baby.
Of course, I was listening to the conversation, and I totally agree with you, what you said about Alabama and Auburn always just kind of being in the middle, and we need a coach to bring us out of that and put us up with the elite, and I don't understand Pearl not being hired by Alabama. I do not understand, but kudos to Auburn for getting him.
These are my honest feelings about Grant, and the cat just left Auburn. I can't remember his name. I wasn't even going to talk about basketball. But
Tony Barbie.
I think that Grant and Barbie both are great basketball minds, and they connect the dots. They just may be at the wrong place. Maybe there's different schools out there at a lower level or something where they can both be far more successful. Maybe they're just in the wrong part of the country and they'd be successful up there where it snows a lot, and you know, and that's what those kids do. But down here, we're different people, and we're outdoor people, and we do all kind of things, and we're not just basketball people, and we're not just football people. We hunt and we fish and we chase each other and we fight and make up and all those kind of things, and maybe they do well somewhere else, but you know, I'm not looking for championship basketball. I'm just looking for something that's competitive. Something
I'm looking
that I
for
can
a win.
And watch. I can just watch.
Give me a win on the road. There you go, Phyllis. Give us a win on the road.
Really?
Exactly. How long have we been sitting and listening to this garbage with the coaches we've got, how tough it is to win on the road? It's not
exactly
that tough. It's a game of basketball. And the SEC is not the juggernaut of basketball in this country. You ought to be able to go beat somebody on the road.
Exactly.
And it just doesn't happen. Phyllis, did you bring me a sandwich and a beer or something when you come in here? But don't come in here empty-handed.
If you'll pay for it.
Oh. In the kitchen fixing food and fluffing pillows.
Now, I-Man, you know where I cut off at that channel right there. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not barefoot. I'm not in the kitchen. And I don't do that. You go get your own. But if I do bring it to you, you got to pay me. And I mean cash.
You're talking to the wrong guy.
Got to tip me, too.
You're talking to the wrong guy. I tell you, not taking your wooden nickels, but I expect when you come out of that kitchen, you have a sandwich and a beer when you walk my way.
Well, I tell you what, I expect when you come out of that kitchen, you have me a heated plate.
Yeah, I'll be drinking.
With the bag man with the cash.
I was listening to a guy the other day, and he was talking about Alabama football winning 8 games. Now, I think that's as ridiculous a statement, because I can be honest about this. I can see Alabama with a 3 or maybe a 4-game schedule this year. They ought to beat everybody else with just going out and playing fundamental football.
Yep.
And I think Alabama has LSU, Auburn, who else?
Ole Miss,
and maybe anything that Texas A&M can put together, because I think someone's a good coach, but they ought to be A&M, I see them having a 10-win season at least, and not sure with Ole Miss, Auburn, and LSU. They could win those games. They've got the best athletes on paper. But, you know, it's not always about the best athletes. It's about being able to get those guys to connect the dots. And that's
exactly
what Malzahn did last year. They were able to connect the dots. And the most amazing thing about that game was it was 28-28 with 1 second left.
Uh-huh.
And it was pure competition. And you know, Auburn played LSU the year prior, and everything fell apart. They just fell apart. It looked like they quit. They play LSU this year, get beat, but I tell you what, they came together as a team and they started playing motivated football, and it turned into what it turned into. I do not believe Auburn and Florida State were the best two teams in the country, but that's the way the dominoes fell. You know, they just fell
apart. At that time, Auburn and FSU were both the best two in the country. And I agree with you because I watched that LSU game this year, and I made a comment to Mrs. Burt. I looked at her and I said, I'm going to tell you, these guys put up a fight tonight. It's probably the best I've seen Auburn play in the past 5 years, and we need to strap on our chin straps and be ready because it's going to be a war by the time we get down to the Plains.
I heard AJ make some comments about the young entitled players, and I tell you, I disagree with that totally, because those young players were not on the field. I think it was the older players, if there was problems and issues, it was taking place with the players that were on the field. Because,
you hit the nail on the head right there. There was problems. There was issues. There wasn't any camaraderie in that with Alabama's team that day. Somebody was pissed at somebody else, and then that person went and told somebody else, and then they got pissed at that other person, and then Alabama is out there on the field fighting themselves, and Auburn's winning while they're arguing. That's exactly the way it seemed to me.
Did you watch the same game I watched? It looked like there was 11 Auburn players and 11 Alabama players, and I didn't see anybody pushing anybody around. I saw two teams playing their ass off, and one team just was able to whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Well,
I know.
I think what I'm trying to say is I think there was a breakdown because some of the players were being told what to do in maybe not such a nice way. They were being ordered around. They didn't appreciate that. I think it was a breakdown in the team itself, and Saban has got to take the team for this year, get them together, and say, look, you got any beef with each other, you take it out somewhere else. But when you're on the field, the beef is with the opposite team that you're playing. If he don't
But Phyllis, you said that about Bear Bryant, Gene Stallings, and Mike Dubose, and Mike Shula, and Mike Price.
No, I didn't say about Dubose and Mike Shula.
Listen, yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yeah, I mean,
Florida twice in 1 year.
These are young men out there that are able to take a fist and pound each other's brains out. I mean, this is not some little Girl Scout thing worried about who's selling more cookies than the other one. This is football.
I know what you're saying. I'm just saying, Bama, the team didn't look glued together that day. They didn't look like they were playing together. It was almost like part of them was over here, part of them was over there. They didn't know what to do because they weren't talking to each other.
It didn't have anything to do with that. They were suspect in the defensive backfield. They had some line problems. and of course, they've always got – have y'all ever had a quarterback that had good ribs? I mean, at some point, somebody's going to break a rib and puncture a lung out there on that field. But, I mean, the last three quarterbacks y'all have had have played with broke ribs. I mean, what the hell here? Y'all got milk up there or something?
Look, Saban has got – he's got something up his sleeve, and it's going to be in the form
of
a quarterback.
Of course he does. He pulled quarters out of your ear, too.
Oh, good grief. You're out of your freaking mind. Look, Alabama, they are loaded. They are loaded. And we've got more than one quarterback to choose from. We got
five
stars. We got four stars. We are loaded with people that was recruited this year, not counting the team that was left. And Saban's going to have them ready. Saban's pissed. He feels like he needs a day of reckoning. But it's not going to be a day of reckoning. It's going to be the entire fall. Every Saturday this fall is going to be his day of reckoning. And we will get through it. And we will get through it in a great way.
Around the ceiling and do some
Alabama is... You just wait. I can't talk to them right now, but you just wait. I have a gut feeling, and when Alabama hits that field this year, it's going to be one hell of a day of reckoning.
Bird, give her some.
And you can take that to the bank.
Of course, we're going to take it to the bank.
I'm going
to
tell you, Phyllis, I think Phyllis is onto something, and I can't really say because I'm not in the locker room.
It's going crazy.
Legend and I were privy to a conversation about 2 weeks ago with people that are a lot more tied in than we are. Okay, I'm going to say this.
Phyllis nailed it.
And Phyllis, whether you knew it or not, and none of us, of course, you know, and you'd look funny in a jock strap, but none of us are running around.
Believe me, I wasn't there.
In that locker room, but and something that I hit on about a month and a half ago was brought up, and I will have to agree. Is that I think part of our problem was A.J. McCarron, and I think that A.J. had gotten the big head, and I think there was two sets of rules down there. When our little running back lipped off the Burton Burns and told, you know, Coach Burns what he thought, and Coach Burns sat his butt on the bench, and then you turn around and you see A.J. lipping off to Coach Saban, then all of a sudden that's a dual standard that's set for the team. And I don't think it doesn't do the team any good. It doesn't do the leadership of the senior any good. And I think the kids down there were just kind of sick of his snotty attitude.
I think they got sick of his mama's attitude too, because she said one thing and starts tweeting another. And
well, she's an Auburn fan.
Yeah, but she wasn't on the field.
Yeah, but
she wasn't on the field. I tell you what.
I believe AJ's a good kid. I honestly believe
I think he's a good kid, and I think he's okay.
Oh, yeah, me too. Most definitely.
I think that
he may have let a little power go to his head, and he came off as arrogant to some of our players,
I'm not going to play
– this play like you told me to play it.
You've got the head coach at the University of Alabama, the $7.5 million man, running, jumping, leaping in his arms, and the hamburger girl got pissed off. I mean, so what?
I saw that. I just wished it had been my arms, but anyway. Because, I mean, after all, he's a $7 million coach. But I'm just looking forward to the fall. I can't hardly wait till it gets here.
Let me ask Phyllis a question right quick.
Sure.
I got a question for I-Man, too. Yeah, and we appreciate y'all coming on tonight. Y'all are absolutely great. Two Hall of Fame.
Oh, I'm having a ball.
We appreciate it so much. Phyllis, what did you think of the Lane Kiffin hire? I'm interested to hear your take on that.
I think it's good. I think that Lane Kiffin is where he belongs. I think that Lane Kiffin is going to turn that program around. I think that because of the bad notoriety he had, I think he feels like he has got to make something work this time to put himself back into the favor of the sports of Alabama and all the sports in the country. And I think he's going to doubly work to get this to get the team prepared. And I think he's gonna be a huge surprise to everyone who don't think he's gonna do any good. I think he's gonna be fine.
What did you think of the hire?
You know, I know he had some success at USC, but it turned out USC that was the best team money could buy. And I'm certainly not knocking the coaching staff, because when you got the players and they had their issues out there. And of course, they lose the Heisman Trophy and Kim Kardashian's fat ass, but that was probably a good thing. But when you look at Kiffin alone, all the stuff I've ever heard about him was his dad and what a great defense his dad brought to the table. So I'm just going to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a young enough guy that maybe connects the dots with these players, and maybe Saban's style and that kind of thing is old school. And you know, we're talking about these young kids, and somebody's got to be able to connect the dots with them. And I think that's where Lashley and Malzahn come in. I think they're able to connect the dots with,
yep,
you know, without that different generation gap between them. And you can make the game as complicated or as simple as you want to, and that's what we're seeing in the state, simple and complicated. And Kiffin is probably – it was probably a good time to get Kiffin because you're bringing in a kid from Florida State. And if you're just going to start new, I remember a few years back when the trade centers and everything fell, we had Daniel Cobb at quarterback. Now, I tell you, that poor kid, it when they played Southern Cal out there, he had four turnovers in the red zone attributed right to him, whether it be fumbles or interceptions, in the first quarter of the game. Could have had him 28-0, and they turned around and lost by six. But Daniel, and they went looking for that guy too. I couldn't believe that. But when they finally put Jason Campbell in, when they played Syracuse, it was just time to just build for the future. And I think that's what they're doing with Kiffin and the kid coming out of Florida State, building for the future. I think they'll be fine.
I think so too. I fully agree. I certainly do.
And the way Saban does his camp, making everybody shut up, is a good thing. Because you get many people out there talking, and Kiffin is the one that will probably try to steal some of the light. And if you keep your foot on Kiffin and you make him go over there and just be a good offensive coordinator, he'll probably be just fine. But when you've got the athletes, when you've got the athletes that Alabama has and you halfway know the game, those kids are going to go out and make the plays, and they're going to make you look great.
Right,
so,
and with Saban, with Saban right now, it's not a party ball, of course, because you know he's just so stern and everything. But he's got to realize sometimes it turns into a disco ball. You got to go out there and you got to play like you're dancing the night away, and you don't stop dancing until that game is over.
Well,
and then when the game's over, you grab the quarterback from the other team and you do the salsa from one end of the field to the other end of the field, patting him on the ass and telling him good game. That's exactly what you do.
Who was the quarterback that walked up? Was it McElroy that walked up to the line and slapped the guard on the ass or something during that game?
I think it was. I think it was.
McElroy was a good leader, and y'all have had good leaders at quarterback. And I was listening to Daryl talking last week about Marshall, and you know, Daryl just doesn't know a damn thing about football. He just comes on and excuses things. I don't think the guy can even watch a game. He's too busy trying to memorize stats and names and addresses. I mean, he thinks he's a professional commentator, and I could give a damn about anybody's name. Go out there and make a play, and I might remember your name. But,
well,
he did coin
the term Rudy Pooh.
No, hell no. Walt Disney, he stole that from Walt Disney or Daffy Duck or somebody.
I didn't know that, man.
You know, Daryl, I love Daryl Death. He's my favorite jackass from Georgia.
I love him, too. He's a friend of mine, and always will be.
If his football team could damn win something, I don't mind going through a 3-9 football team because I love my Auburn Tigers, and I take the wins with the losses. But he will jump ship. He'll jump ship on his team in a heartbeat.
I know.
I thought Georgia had the best football team in the country, bar none, last year, and then injuries just ate them alive.
Boy, they were awesome. They were, and then injuries one after the other. That was sad. That was sad to watch.
I feel like this is an episode of damn Ricky and Lucy. I mean, did you ever say anything? I mean, damn bird. I mean, what'd y'all do here? I mean, not the performance of the team.
I'm just winding up and let them go.
Somebody's let her go. I mean,
we are enjoying this right here.
I am enjoying it. Thank you for having me. I am having a ball.
What we're doing is making y'all's job easy. I mean, we've just killed 15 minutes of, what, 2 hours?
Yeah, we appreciate it. We appreciate it.
I love the show. I think the show is outstanding. And I like listening to Bammers talk because Bammers get into this tunnel. And I tell you, I'm amazed, man. It's like
disco.
No, it's not disco. I was thinking more along the lines of BS, but it at least something I can listen to. And it gives me something to watch for and listen to. But you know, we've got two of the best football. We've got two of the finest programs in the country. And when I talk to Daryl, Daryl's always about wins and losses. He's not about what successful programs have built and brought to the table.
Right.
And if you had a dividing line and you took the big boys and you put everybody else, and there's 120-some-odd teams, and you said we're going to cut it at 60, Alabama, Auburn, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, all of those schools would be there, including Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt's been a whipping boy for years. But Vanderbilt, if they were in what's left of the Big East Conference, and if they had played in the ACC last year, I thought the ACC was the weakest conference, bar none. There was two teams, and actually one of them was decent, and that was Florida State, and I think Duke just had a good year, and everybody else sucked. I mean, they sucked bad. But the big boy schools, I mean, the SEC, and I'm always going to be an SEC guy, and I try to root for everybody in the SEC. I have teams I root for and teams that I pull against, but it depends on who the teams I pull against are playing. And when Bama played Notre Dame, you better know I was sitting over here pulling for the Tide because I am not a Notre Dame fan, period. And I don't know who said Notre Dame was the, you know, they're all deserving of this one network regardless of who they play. And I don't know who the hell told the Rose Bowl they were the granddaddy of a damn thing.
Because
they don't bring anything to the table to me. But when the BCS started the Rose Bowl, didn't want anything to do with it, and then they got left out, and then they decided they wanted to get in, and then the BCS had to accommodate them by giving them the championship game the year they came in, as opposed to making them wait. And you know, there's nothing fantastic about California to me. I mean,
I don't think so either.
Look at the elected officials, and there's nothing intriguing about California to me. Nothing about the West Coast. Maybe Oregon.
Well, I'm gonna pose a question to all you guys. What do you think's going on over at Ole Miss with Hugh Freeze?
That's interesting. He's quietly building him a program over there, and if he can keep the athletes, I don't know that they'll ever get to the status that maybe the Alabama, Auburns, and LSUs will get to, because that's a lot of competition. You can't play all three of those teams and beat them. Mississippi State beat Alabama and Auburn one year, but it was going through some pretty good transitions and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Mississippi's interesting.
It intrigues me to see a team that, and it's not really a worst to first because they're always mediocre. I mean, let's face it, they're always
they're in the middle.
They're pretty much a mediocre team. But all of a sudden, he's picking up athletes that, that slipped through the Auburn net and slipped through the Alabama net that I know both of our programs would give their eye teeth for. And it's just I have to sit there and wonder what the heck's going on at Ole Miss. Because, man, have you ever been to that stadium?
No, never been.
It's like you took one of our better high school stadiums and pumped it up with steroids. It's just a big old high school stadium. I'm not kidding. It's just side of the Grove. It's nothing special. It seats about 48,000 people. You know, it's just I have to wonder because you look at the campus. The campus is not that much different than Mississippi State. So it's not like they're. I mean, the closest metropolitan center would be Memphis, which is what, about an hour away from school. So I guess that has its draw. But anyway, I sit and watch those guys that have had, it's been, what, 40 years since they've had a real program?
And that's right. And Tuberville was over there when they were in probation, and he had them competitive. And I was shocked by that. If you could have Ole Miss competitive under probation sanctions, and then, of course, he came to Auburn in a fine box. And then Cutcliffe went over there and did a little something, but they really weren't able to pull it, even with Manning at quarterback. But Freeze is definitely come on. I think the guy at Arkansas will be coming on, and Freeze is still building the program. You know,
I'm gonna tell you something.
Ole Miss is gonna. going to keep? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry, Phyllis.
Oh, that's okay. Ole Miss, I'm worried. I'm worried about that game because I've been reading what I can. I've been talking to my brothers, and they're, of course, they know the Alabama handbook from A to Z, but they study other colleges too, and they have told me too. They said, we got to watch out for Ole Miss. There's just something about what Freeze is doing, and that I just think that they're going to give Bama some trouble, and Bama better be ready for them.
Do you think if he's successful over there, that he's going to bolt to another school? I don't know what his contract or his buyout is, anything, but I'm sure that there's a lot of schools that would match that and dwarf it.
Yeah, I have to agree. He does seem to be a prime candidate for another big-time school. And like Bird said, I have been down there, and it's nothing impressive. I mean, they could be going back to the days of Ed Orgeron and paying people.
Yeah.
I'm smacking my lips. I'm just sitting here on the air smacking my lips is all I got to say.
It could be a bunch of psychotic kids that are sitting in the locker room, and all they can think of is beating Auburn and beating Alabama, and that's all that's on their mind. You know, that's going to make a pretty nasty football team.
Well,
that's
Auburn
all they've got
and
on
Alabama
their mind.
The only thing pretty about them is that boy that's got that long hair as a quarterback. He's pretty.
Oh, yeah. You know, I want to plait his hair so bad. I just want to pull that helmet off and just plait the heck out of it. I love to plait hair. I used to plait my daughter's hair, and I would just – I'd have little plaits sticking up all over his head so that when he put his helmet on, little bitty twigs would be sticking out at his forehead, down below his neck, out the side, and he would scare somebody to death coming at him. You'd have to close your eyes before you could tackle him.
I
don't know. When I see him, that's all I can think about, is getting a hold of that hair.
You can put them little black bear Brett's in his hair.
Oh, the Brett's. Yeah, I'll have to have a pack of Brett's. Yeah, I wouldn't even go towards him. And they'd be pink. They would be pink.
You mentioned the black bears, and I still don't know how I feel about all that political correctness with the name changes and all those kind of things. And sometimes the whole political correct world, and I understand it's supposed to be a kinder, gentler place and all those kind of things, and I'm all for that. But it seems like there's some things that we're doing and people are just folding tent and running from. And I don't know that being the rebels was a bad thing. I mean, who said being the rebels was a bad thing? And, I'm not going to compare to the rebels to the 60s or the 50s.
But black people just may. I mean, I can understand where they're coming from. When they see that rebel flag, it takes them back to the atrocities that was done to their forefathers, and I can really understand that. My son has got a Confederate flag that has been in our family I don't know how many years, but I will not let him fly it outside. I told him if he wanted to stick it on his ceiling, he could, and that's where it's at. But I just, you know, I can kind of understand that, and if I don't know. I don't know about the name change, but
it's just that they were the rebels, and that's what I remember them as. And,
yes.
And saying black bears just seems kind of weird to me. And
it
is a little weird. Yeah, I have to admit it is a little. And I agree with Phyllis too. Hey, y'all been great tonight. Before we let y'all go, and thank y'all so much for coming on, but let me get y'all's prediction for next year. I'm Ann First. What about the Auburn Tigers? What can we expect next January the record to be like?
Well, I tell you what, they'll probably beat the living hell out of Arkansas the first game. And with their schedule, having to play Mississippi State, Mississippi, LSU, Alabama, and then turn around and play Georgia and South Carolina out of the East, I think they're going to be successful. I'm not going to come out here and say, you know, 12-0 or anything stupid like that. But I could see them. I could see Auburn and Alabama in the Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa, you know, with 9-10 wins between them. I believe so.
Phyllis,
I know what you're going to say there, but go ahead and say it anyway.
Call me stupid. They're going to win 12 games. They're going all the way, baby, all the way.
Well, I think you hit on a great point tonight. I think Nick Saban is going to be one pissed off coach next year.
He's going to stay pissed off till then, and then it's going to be like an explosion. I guarantee you, we're going to see a different team.
Sometimes I love looking at the grid schedules because you get to see who's playing who, when, where, and how, and off weeks and that kind of thing. And Alabama's got a really favorable schedule in their off weeks.
It's easy. Let's say it the way it is, man. It's a cream puff schedule.
It is. It's tailor made because they get four games and get a break.
Yep.
It's in front of Ole Miss and LSU, isn't it?
Yep.
And, so those are good off weeks.
For the record, Auburn's going to be great too. They are going to be great.
Don't patronize me because I'm being kind.
No, I'm not patronizing you. Look, what did I call them on Wednesday before the Saturday of the Iron Bowl? I told Paul on his show. I said I'm in fear of Auburn, and he says why? I said because have you not seen them, Paul? They're a runaway train, and Bama better be ready. Come that Saturday, I watched that runaway train.
I wasn't surprised because I felt it in my gut anyway. I expect
with
Mason leaving, and he was a freak of nature, just like Ingram and a lot of other running backs that have come out of the state. But actually, you'll probably see Auburn throwing the ball a little bit more this year. But anyway, guys, I had a great time.
I've had a wonderful time. Thank you for inviting me.
I like mine toasted, and I want my beer on ice and my whiskey cold.
Okay. Do you think your head would be able to stand it when I pour it over on top of you?
you'll bring that plate, and when you're in my presence, you'll say, thank you, sir.
Oh, shit. You better believe. Okay, let's think that, okay? Let's believe that, okay?
Y'all have great evening.
Thank
you both so much for coming on.
Thank you, legend. We love you, too.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. Anytime. Bye-bye.
Well, it's not every day you get two Hall of Fame callers like that going back and forth.
Man, that was one of the quicker hours we've ever had on this show. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, and I didn't have a whole lot to do. I got to sit back and just kind of put my feet up, and I lit a couple of candles in here, and it's great. I mean, the studio has got a nice cozy warmth. I want to sit around and talk tonight.
That was great. I mean, them two can go, boy. I tell you, them two can go right there. That's a great moment on Bam's Radio. Having Phyllis and I, man, going back and forth.
Rock, do any other calls before we go to break?
We actually do have one more caller. I recognize this number is Bring the Pain. Brick Pain, you are live. What you got for us this evening?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, little brother, how are you doing?
I'm doing so-so. Just waiting on my neurosurgeon to call me.
Well, that would be me, wouldn't it? Because you know I am Birmingham's leading unlicensed gynecologist.
But, you know, hey, it was great to hear Phyllis on this show. Always here on Paul Feinbaum. She's a great caller, man.
Hey, Bubba, didn't your girl have a grand slam last night? Didn't Danae take it out of the park?
She so did, man. She rocked that ball. Pow! And it was gone. But she's not my girlfriend.
Okay.
She's a friend.
Okay. Did your friend, who happens to be a girl, rock the ball last night? How about that?
She rocked it. But, hey, I was calling. I called into 99.1 earlier today.
Right.
This union crap that is going on, I've got a question about that. And y'all give me y'all's opinion. If this thing works, wouldn't that kill other sports at schools and schools that can't afford to pay their players, wouldn't that ruin their football team?
Well, it's, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to defer the answer until the next hour when we bring Kerry Clark on, because I know that Kerry is going to have a definitive opinion, and it's probably going to be a lot more learned than Rock or I, because Legend, unfortunately, was calling me an attorney at the first of the show, and I just about blew up.
I meant that in a good way, Bird, not in a bad way.
I'll put it this way. Since Kerry is whipping out on me, Kerry is saying he ain't going to say about no unions. I'll say this. I think what it does, Payne, is it opens the door for a bunch of attorneys to make a bunch of money, number one. Number two, what it does is it puts the NCAA on notice. If nothing else, if good comes out of this for the kids, if some good comes out of this for the kids, so that the fat cats are sitting at the NCAA offices and the guys that run the universities are not stuffing money in their pockets as fast as they can, you know, off of the sweat and the hard work that the kids are putting in and getting no compensation, I think there can be a formula put together. Actually, I did. I built a formula a year and a half ago, but, you know, everybody laughed at me. But bottom line is I think that what will happen is nobody needs to wrap their hands in the air except for, I think, a lot of AD should be very nervous right now. And I think it's something that it's opened the door for some serious discussion for change within the NCAA on how student athletes are being treated. How's that for a good non-answer?
That's a good answer, and you know what? And I agree with you. This is how I would solve the problem if I was whoever is over this crap. This is how I would solve the problem. I will give every student athlete, no matter if it's a men's or women's sport, give them an allowance.
Well,
because most football players only stay what, 2 years, and they're gone into the NFL draft. Give them an allowance, a $500 allowance each month, and that would solve the problem.
What would happen with that, and Rock brought this up at the top of the hour, was, okay, do you pay the third string walk-on the same $500 a month that a Mark Ingram gets when he's your poster child for the university? And that's where the conundrum sets in. But, again, I think there's a formula. You could do it based on years that you've been there. You can do it based on playing time, and there's concrete criteria that can be applied to this. Say, look, you do your job for us. You hit the books, you hit the field, and that's again. And I would take a percentage of the profits that the university makes, and I would put it in escrow account so that once you get your degree as an athlete, that you're going to get a pretty nice check once you receive your degree. Then, of course, all the rules are off with the NCAA. All bets are off because you now have your degree, you're no longer playing, but there's a $30,000 bonus or a $50,000 bonus or a $100,000 bonus sitting for you to stay in school, get your degree, and go all the way through based on the profits that these guys are making off the TV and off the artwork and off of the radio rights and off the any way that you, if you say Bama, you got to give them a nickel.
Well, Bert, I asked you a question earlier today, and it just came to my mind. You know, all these schools are not making money, but when you start talking about a union, when you look at the NFL, one team makes more than another team. The Raiders make more than the Carolina Panthers or the Jacksonville Jaguars, but yet the union affords all the retired players the same amount of money. I just wonder, once you go talking union, does a small school is allowed the same amount of money that an Alabama player is allowed, even though they don't make the same amount of money that the University of Alabama makes? I wonder if it goes in the, would go in all one pie.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Rock, can you cue us up a break, and we're going to bring on Carrie into the next hour. Legend, will you stay with us for just a little bit? Because I know that Carrie's got some probably some insight for you, and you can pose that question to him. Because I'm fresh out of intelligence this evening. I just left mine on the floor with I-Man and Phyllis.
But yes, I do have a break queued, and we will be right back for more BAMS Radio.
There we go.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice. In fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands at a fraction of what other chain stores charge. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama, on Highway 31. Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
You've got me jumping around in here. I love me some AC/DC, Def Leppard, Hysteria, whatever that was.
Motley Crue.
It's the same genre. Come on.
I got you.
Yeah.
It's all guys wearing pants way too tight, you know, and hair too long, and bodies that looks like they've done nothing but meth for their entire life. Well, we've got our good friend Carrie Clark on, and I've asked Legend to stay around a little bit so that we've got a lot of different issues that we're discussing. And, Carrie, I don't know if you heard the first of the show or not, but we kind of dove in with both feet to the NCAA, and I know you'd rather sort of join that. And Bring the Pain, of course, brought that up at the end of the first segment.
Let me just say one thing about it.
Yes, sir.
What was passed today only affects private schools.
Ah.
It doesn't affect Alabama or Auburn or LSU. It does affect Notre Dame and Vanderbilt and folks like that.
Stanford?
Stanford. But so the third-string right tackle at Stanford might be in danger of losing his scholarship, but the effect on Tuscaloosa is, you know, less than 1%. It's not going to – until they get it to where it affects public schools, which there's a good chance they never will, I don't think we should worry too much about it.
Carrie, do you think that this at all is going to send a shot across the bow of the NCAA and at least stimulate some dialogue that will help the student-athlete?
A little bit, yeah. I'm not against them getting a stipend of some sort. I mean, they need to be able to have dates and all that. I have no problem with that. But,
me either.
what happened today has nil effect on Alabama yet. Now, if they ever put it in public schools, then we need to dive into it. But right now, you know, I don't even think we play anybody this year that it affects, at least in the regular season.
It's years off anyway, but it's something that I think that if nothing else, it will sometimes a tiny ripple can turn into a tidal wave. So it's just kind of fascinating for us to sit on the sideline and ruminate about. And, of course, I'm not going to have any high-powered attorney on, but I do hope that the outcome of this is that it does – positively affect the student athletes, the guys that are down there working their butts off. Let's face it. You know, ask how many of the Alabama football players how much time off they really get. They don't get any time off. They work 365 days a year, guy.
That's right. There's no doubt about that. Now, Legend, you got any good questions for me after four spring practices?
I do, but I want to go back to that for a second. So you're saying if I go to Notre Dame, I might get paid, but I can't get paid at Alabama? Is that correct?
If the Notre Dame team unionizes, yes.
Wouldn't that give Notre Dame a distinct advantage over Alabama and everybody else in the country?
It could a little bit, but some people want to win.
Ooh.
Notre Dame reached their epicenter a year before last. They're back on the decline now.
Well, I just want to jump in here briefly about this union deal. It's going to get appealed to the National Labor Relations Board in D.C. or to the Supreme Court. So this thing, this problem, I'm not saying you should stick your head in the sand over it, but it's certainly not going to be in effect for the next few years at the earliest.
Well, let's go to spring football then.
Talk to me.
I'm dying to hear what's going down there, Carrie. Give us the insight.
I'm going to ask questions from my man. Go ahead.
Well, tell us about this offense. I noticed online that David Cromwell has been hurt, but still he wears number 12, and he's really an imposing figure on the field. Talk about him a little bit and the other quarterback situation at the University of Alabama after the first week of spring.
Well, right now, the first-string reps are being split between Blake Sims and Alec Morris. They're both taking snaps with the ones right now, okay? And the twos is a combination of Parker McLeod and Cooper Bateman. And all Cornwell is doing is standing off to the side and throwing to the tight ends when the tight ends do their pass routes. When they don't do that, he ain't doing nothing, because they're not convinced his knee is completely ready. They don't expect him to play at A-Day or anything like that. They expect him to enter the race in full pads. As far as running with the teams and, you know, like running plays against 11 other people, he won't be doing that until Coker's there. So, and Coker's getting there in May. And Coker's is already got a playbook and a bunch of DVDs about the offense. And he's coming to every Saturday practice we have all spring. So Coker's getting mental reps. Other guys are getting physical reps. All Cornwell's doing is throwing short routes to the tight ends right now. He's not working with the wide receivers at all or the linemen or anything like that. Cornwell is he's pretty much – I mean, he probably could go if there was a game they needed to play, but he's really they want a red shirt Cornwell if they can, okay? So they want Coker to come in here and be the starter for the next 2 years, and then they'll reopen the battle, you know, two springs from now. But as far as your question about the offense, it is going to be different. The play calling is a lot simplified. It takes the quarterback about 5 seconds to call a play now. The last four or five years, it's taken 15, 20 seconds to call a play. So that has a lot to do with when you're trying to huddle quick or whatever. But it's simplified offense with easier play names, and it's going to use the tight end more, and it's going to use the fullback on a whole lot more regular basis than the fullback was seen. Everybody that's playing H-back is having to learn fullback, too. Jocelyn Fowler is the best beneficiary of this, but they're also teaching it to people like Corey McCarron and other H-backs. You know, they're all having to learn to be fullbacks and not just H-backs. You have your inline tight ends that play nothing but tight end, you know, like Vogler and OJ and people like that, but then you have that group of H-backs that's learning both positions, so that's interesting. But, I mean, bottom line, if it's fourth and one, there's now going to be a fullback leading the tailback through the hole, and I'm all about that.
Yay, yay, yay. Go Alabama, go.
I like that, too. Well, we noticed a big difference from last year to this year in the offense.
Well, but because of the fullback being used more, I'm going to say yeah. And because of the tight end, I'm going to tell you something, Legend. O.J. Howard's going to have more than 14 catches this year. I say 30, 35 catches minimum for O.J.
I like that.
And why would you not? The guy is a physical beast. I mean, he's a weapon. Why would you not turn your weapon loose?
You've got to do it, man. The biggest issue right now on the offense, Legend, and other guys, Bird, Thomas, the biggest issue right now is trying to find who's the best five offensive linemen.
Really?
Because, you know, at this point, the guy that we had all ordained as the left tackle was running third team. And that's not a slam on Cameron Robinson at all. It's just a matter of learning the college game and the technique and the plays. And, you know, it's not like high school where they say, Cam, block that dude in front of you, take his ass to the ground, and you're good. It's a lot more to it now for him. So he's mentally learned. The first team left tackle right now is Leon Brown. And, you know, Leon started the bowl game at right guard. The first team left guard right now is still Ari Quanjo. I'm of the mindset that it might not be when we play West Virginia, but he is right now. The first string center is Ryan Kelly because Chad Lindsey transferred, probably going to sign with Michigan, play for Nussmeier. Good for him. He'll get to start his whole senior year. I don't blame a kid for wanting to start. I thought the offense functioned better when Chad was in there last year. But the right guard right now the right tackle is Austin Shepherd. The right guard right now,
Grant Hill, I think.
I don't think he's running with the ones, though, Thomas. No, Grant Hill's the backup at right tackle. He's backing up Shepherd. I don't even know why. Let's see, the backup left guard is Luatua. I'm trying to think who the starting right guard is right now, and I have sure enough drawn a blank. But if anybody's got a roster, they can throw some names out, and I'll tell you who it is. But anyway. Now, Grant is a backup right tackle right now to Austin Shepherd. And that's the thing. When Dominic Jackson gets here in August, if he takes the right tackle job, they'll just move Shepherd in to guard. But as Drew pointed out last week, Dominic has got some experience at guard, too. I'm not sure why. I thought I had the whole starting five offensive line in the first four practices memorized, but the right guard, I'm drawing a blank right now. But it was somebody that played some last year. I know that.
I've got a roster pulled up.
people between 60 and 79.
I sorted my position. So, I think you had mentioned it was Alphonse Taylor. I thought you said
yes. That's who it is. Yes.
There you go.
It's Big Shank. He's running first string at right guard. Alphonse Taylor, number 50. Big old boy. He's built like a tackle, but he's been playing guard the last couple of years. And I don't know that Alphonse will be the starter against West Virginia, because if Dominic Jackson gets here and shows he's better in time for the first game, it'll be him. And, Thomas, you're right. That is why we keep you around, he said in the back chat. But so yeah, that the offensive line, it's a work in progress. I'm like Drew. I'm a big Grant Hill fan, and I think Grant Hill is one of the best five linemen we have. And I'm really hoping that once everything settles in this August, that Grant will get a look at left guard. Because I'm gonna be honest with y'all, I trust Grant Hill over there more than I do Ari Quanjo. I do, and Leon Brown is going to play somewhere. Might play right guard, or he might even be the sixth man. Or Grant might be the sixth man. Grant might be the first guy off the bench and play both guard and tackle. But he's definitely going to litter this fall. I'll never consider Grant Hill a second teamer unless Saban says so. I think when they push that first roster out to the media a couple of days before the West Virginia game, Grant's going to be listed at some of those positions as the or guy. You know, it might say Ari Quanjo or Grant Hill.
Right.
Saban says or means or. Don't try to say that's a second teamer. Or means or. So, but, yeah, the thing is, Legend, they're trying to get the best five guys out there on the offensive line, and it's going to be real interesting to see who the five are that run with the first team on A-Day. But, like I said, Dominic Jackson is a wild card. He could start at guard or tackle. So, but Austin Shepard's always going to be, the one year he's left, one of the best five guys. So even if Dominic Jackson, they decide to put him at right tackle, you'll see Austin Shepard at right guard right by him. So Austin's going to be out there one way or the other. I got a feeling he'll leave him at right tackle since he played it so well last year. But we'll see. Jackson has played guard and tackle both in junior college. He can help at either one. And there's nothing saying he couldn't play guard this year and tackle next year. So Leon Brown
it don't sound
well.
It don't sound like we have a problem on the offensive line the way some folks have said we do.
Well, you know, if we were playing somebody that's like LSU that's decent at stopping the run the first game of the year, you know, they didn't look very good against against Virginia Tech last year, Legend.
Nope.
They got their asses whipped a good part of that game. But a lot of it was because they weren't gelled yet as a unit. You know, it was guys playing different positions and stuff like that. And as the year went on, I felt like that they got better and better. And I mean, that second half of the LSU game, that offensive line played as well as any offensive line at Alabama in the last 7 or 8 years. So they had the ability to do it, you know, when they got their heads right. But sometimes they had it right and sometimes they didn't. They got to get the best five guys out there and then figure out who the first couple of guys off the bench are. And there'll be times they put in a whole second unit when they're killing somebody or whatever, but you know, it's not that they have a lack of talent. It's a lack of chemistry right now, Legend. They got to get used to playing together. They got to get the best five and get them together. And until that happens, people keep saying they're struggling. But then they're liable to throw up 300 yards rushing against West Virginia. Who knows?
Kerry, from what I've heard, it sounds like Lane Kiffin has simplified the offense. Well, doesn't that accrue to the offensive line as well?
Yeah, it does. But so, you still have to have Ryan Kelly calling out the right blocking assignments.
Yeah, I understand. But but what you're seeing is that you're paring it down so that these guys can
learn it quicker.
Yeah, basically they're able to snap to and say, okay, I know exactly what I'm supposed to do right now on this play.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Okay.
How much control does you know, I know this is Kiffin's offense, but is it totally his offense? Is he being allowed 100% control of this thing?
I wouldn't say 100%. He was given a playbook. I'll tell you what, Legend, I'll tell you what Ron Middleton said after that 1 year he worked for us in 07. He said he got there and, you know, he came from he was an Auburn player. They were all ticked when we signed him, but he came over from Duke, and he said I came in there and I had all these aspirations and great ideas for swapping up the special teams, and my first day on the job, Saban handed me a playbook and said, "This is the special teams playbook. Go for it. Use it." He didn't say change it, but Saban has given some latitude to Kiffin as far as, like, you know, adding the fullback in on more plays because Kiffin sold that to him. And also, you know, I'm sure Kiffin don't coach quarterbacks the same way that Michael Wayne or Nussmeier did. I'm sure he didn't. But I know he knows how to coach quarterbacks because he took the guy at Tennessee back in 09, Jonathan Crompton, who was literally barely better than Spencer Pennington. And he made that guy into a good SEC quarterback. So I know he can coach quarterbacks. But as far as running the offense, you got two type A alpha personalities there. And my understanding is there's already been a little flare-up in the meeting room, but it was quickly handled and brushed aside. Saban knew what he was getting into, bottom line, when he hired Kiffin. Kiffin's a hard-headed guy, but most of the great ones are. Saban's a hard-headed guy. So he's letting him put in little things one at a time, like the fullback on short yardage or, you know, more passes to the tight end. You know, is he changing the whole playbook? No, he's definitely not. He's probably tweaking somewhere between 5 and 10% of it, Legend.
Well, it would be stupid to take a playbook and throw it out when everybody on the team knows what that playbook or at least the bases are.
Right.
But it's also
and it was an offense that was working.
And an offense that worked and, you know,
scored.
Won some championships and scored.
Yes.
Yeah.
3 out of 5.
But by the same token, it would, you know, if you've got that type of talent sitting on the sideline wearing a headset or up in the box in a Lane Kiffin, then you certainly want his ideas coming down to the field. So I applaud Saban for what he's doing. I applaud for the way he's applying it. And I'm be quite frank with all you guys. I'm beyond tickled to see them play. It's going to be, I think, a whole lot of fun for the Alabama Nation this year to see a little bit of a breath of fresh air. I don't know how to say it. And not a little bit. Holy cow. I'm hearing. What are you hearing about Cristobal? About
still
the,
there.
Well, and the O-line coach. I'm hearing good things about him, too.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that more people didn't come after him for a head coaching job in the offseason. I bet they do this year.
Yeah.
Because he did such a great job at Florida International. I mean, he had those guys playing some ball. Took their one and only bowl game. But anyway, very good offensive line coach. You know, his job now is just to get the best five out there and get their chemistry going and their technique. And I have a lot of trust and faith in Cristobal.
It sounds like the players do, too. I mean,
yeah, I agree.
That seems to be the feedback. Well, Legend, you know what? I appreciate you hanging around. Kerry, what do you think?
I'm glad he did. We're going to talk
about it. Hey, man, it's always an honor to be on with y'all guys, man. I love you guys to death.
Thank you, brother. I do have some updates, like, from some of the other Alabama sports I wanted to go over, and we don't have any callers.
We are currently callerless. The floor is yours.
Well, here's a few things to toss out there just for the buffet, the Bama buffet.
The Bama buffet.
The gymnastics team.
I want Jello.
Top draw in the SEC again and number two in the nation for the second year in a row as far as average attendance per home meet. So good for the gymnastics team. They won the SEC when Florida had some stumbles on the floor, stepped out of bounds, that kind of thing. They won the SEC meet, although Florida was ranked number one in the nation and heavily favored. Alabama just did their thing and hung around and let the Gators screw it up, and they did Saturday. Wish I could have made it. I didn't, but I was still very happy to hear about it. They're seated first in the Seattle Regional. They're thrilled to be going to Seattle. So good for the girls on that. The baseball team did lose 2 out of 3 in Arkansas, won in a romp Friday, and then lost a couple one-run games on Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah.
But they bounced back a little bit last night in a game in Pensacola with a 10-5 victory over Troy. And, you know, Bring the Pains girl, Danae Hayes, was not the only person to hit a grand slam. Casey Houston, a true freshman left fielder for the baseball team, hit one against Troy. But they defeated Troy 10-5, and what some people were saying might have been a little bit of a referendum. Bill Battle has to decide if Mitch Gaspard is the guy to lead Alabama into the new multimillion-dollar stadium upgrade. And there's been Bama fans for years and years and years pushing Bobby Pierce. But last night, Gaspard got the better of Pierce, Pierce being the former Alabama center fielder who now is the head coach at Troy. The softball team was also in Florida last night. And first off, before we talk about last night's game, humongous shout-out to Patrick Murphy and those ladies who took 2 out of 3 in Gainesville from number one Florida.
Yep.
Number one Florida. We went down there and took 2 out of 3. And, I mean, that was a lot of guts and pride showed in that series, I got to tell you. The one game that was on TV Saturday, we lost. But Friday night and Sunday, They look great. They won. There's actually parts of Hoover up here, Bird, that you can pick them up on 95.3 out of Tuscaloosa, the Bear.
Right, right.
And you could actually, if you got errands to run on a Saturday afternoon and you can't make it down to Tuscaloosa, you can ride around Hoover and hear Chad Haney, who's a buddy of mine, call those games. So I did that. But and then last night they ended up their Florida spring trip with a win over Jacksonville U by a final of 6-2. And as we reported earlier, Janae Hayes, the junior shortstop, did hit a grand slam. I don't know if it was dedicated to bring the pain or not, but she did hit one. And so they have moved up to number 2 in the RPI. And then there's 2 softball poles, 5th in one, 7th in the other. So that was good. And, you know, there's more.
Our track and field guys, we won one of the women for the first time ever. I cannot remember her name, but she won a national title. And then we also have one of the guys did too. So we had 2 guys off track and field at the national meets walk away with the heavy iron. I mean, beat everybody in America, guys.
And speaking of the track team, Tony Brown competed as a true freshman just out of high school on the indoor team this year in the 16 in the hurdles. And he is currently a co-first teamer on the football team after 4 practices at cornerback. He didn't qualify for nationals in track, but he had a great regular season, and he will be participating in outdoor track as the football schedule allows.
Right.
An agreement that Saban has with the track staff. So, there's a lot of things going on with recruiting that we'll get into with Drew when he calls in at 9. Football is on spring break, but they'll start back on the 31st. And Saban will address things like, and I'll give Drew credit on this. Matter of fact, just to preview a couple of things that we'll talk to Drew about in the next hour when he calls in, Drew DeArmond from Alabama Intel, and myself, Kerry Clark from BamaMag.com. We draw every week from 9 to 10. But Drew had an interesting story that posted today where he did an in-depth interview with former Alabama running back of Brent Callaway, who was one of those dismissed from the team after the muggings a year and a half ago. DJ Petway, as you know, was already back on the team. And Brent didn't participate in the muggings, but he used actually, neither did DJ, but he watched him. But Brent wasn't even there when they happened. What Brent does, he used a stolen credit card or debit card that they got from those guys in a snack machine and ate the candy or whatever out of the snack machine. And that wasn't Brent's first strike. He'd had other issues before that. Bottom line, Drew wrote a story where Brent is kind of openly campaigning for Saban to take him back this fall.
Really?
He went and played a year at a junior college, and he says his goal and his dream is to come back to Alabama. I don't know if Nick Saban is going to be open to that, but something we're going to ask Drew is about that. The other thing that Drew and his cohort, William Redfish Barger, broke on Alabama Intel was a lot of people have been wondering what happened to backup nose guard Darren Lake and why he's been absent from practice. Well, Drew and his fellow staffers down there did some digging, and they found out that Darren has a torn pec and is out probably till late July or August with that injury. That's why he hasn't been spotted at any of Alabama's practices this week. So that's a couple of interesting things that I'll give Drew credit for breaking. Plus, a whole lot of recruiting stuff in general is going on, aside from what's going on with the team, and they've been doing a good job tracking that, as has the guy at Scout.com that I work with, John Garcia. Maybe we can get John call one week between 8 and 9. John has a broadcasting degree from Syracuse, and he always likes to call into shows like this, but I've never asked him before because we already had Drew from 9 to 10. But maybe we can get John Garcia to call us one week from 8 to 9 if y'all are cool with that.
Love to. Plus, being from Syracuse, we'll be able to understand him.
Yeah. Oh, he's very – he talks every year to the Tuscaloosa Elephant Club and also to a group of fans up in the Huntsville area. And, I mean, he'll go as long as you let him go, man. There's no question he doesn't answer. You know, it's kind of like Drew a lot, and they know each other.
That's cool.
And I understand we have a caller on hold by the name of Marty. Thomas, would you like to bring him in?
Absolutely. Marty, you are live on BAMS Radio. Great to hear from you. What you got for us this evening?
Hey, guys, that first hour was just unbelievable. I really enjoyed that. Even though I, man, is an Auburn fan through and through, I do congratulate him for coming on this show and actually bringing something, you know. And Phyllis is just Phyllis. You know, I just love listening to Phyllis, the passion in her. That was unbelievable first hour. You know, I really enjoyed it. I want to let y'all know that.
Marty. Well, we enjoy you. I mean, my goodness, you're one of our star callers. So, but it was fun radio. That's, you know, Rock and I got to sit back and put our feet up and just kind of watch the melee.
You know, I really wanted to call in and talk to I-Man, but you know, I didn't want to waste my call. But you know, because the hour before Drew comes on is very important. And I love hearing what Kerry brings from the practice field and everything else he brings from Alabama sports. But, you know, a couple quick things real quick. The pay for play for players. You know, I don't have no problem in these players that can't afford, you know, actually buy undergarments or anything like that. I think they need to be able, the NCAA needs to be able to give these football players a debit card of some kind, just like the government does for food stamps or wherever, you know, whether it's $1,000, whether it's $500, who knows what that amount would be. But they can't buy alcohol with it. They can't buy certain things with that card, but they can buy, you know, clothes. They can buy food. And certain things they can buy with that card. I see no problem in that because I know a lot of these guys come in here. You know, I've heard some sad luck stories, and you probably have too, Bird and Kerry. Some of these players that come from some poor families, you know, they get a scholarship, and that is a great benefit. Nobody's arguing with that one bit. But, when they can't even afford to buy underwear or when they can't afford to buy some things that they really need, and nobody else can buy them for it because it's an NCAA
right.
Penalty for doing that. I mean, I think it's ridiculous, you know. Why we have to go this route and let it get into lawyers' hands, let it get into the union, let it get into all this bull crap is ridiculous. They need to jump in front of this and get control of this before it gets out of control, because once it gets into lawyers' hands, man, we all better watch out because of – the college game is going to be ruined as we know it.
Yep. Amen, brother.
Yeah. You know, and one other thing I've got a problem with, I do. I really have a problem with Bill Battles. I've been sitting back and watching this, and I think Bill Battles has come in there with his chest puffed out, thinking he's the AD. You know, what the hell is an AD anyway? You know, AD has nowadays an AD has no power, in my opinion. You know, they really doesn't. He's just a figure that talks to the president of the university and talks to the football coach. You know, I don't even understand why we even need AD. Let the football coach be the AD. You know, Saban could run the whole show. I'll tell you this: if he pisses off Saban, and he gets Saban on the wrong side, and Saban leaves this university because of Bill Battles, I'm going to be pissed. I mean, I'm really going to be pissed. Mal Moore had enough humbleness to him that he figured that out over a period of time, that football runs the show. And you better promote it. You better help it. You better, you know, nurse it along any way you can, because it's going to help your university in every sport, from tennis to swimming to hockey to anything else. Football runs the show. And Bill Battles better understand that. He better not get on the wrong side of Saban and run him off, you know, because it's going to piss a lot of people off. I don't know what y'all think about that.
Well,
go ahead, Thomas.
I think if Bert said something in the first hour that basically Bill Battle has been out of shape with Nick Saban for hiring Lane Kiffin. And my reaction to that entire situation, if true, is why are you even trying to shoot the goose that continues to lay the gold egg? You know?
Exactly.
Sometimes
I
let
like
sleeping dogs lie.
Where did that info come from that he's pissed about him hiring Kiffin?
That Bird said it. He didn't.
Bird read it on Heather's blog, probably.
No, it didn't come from Heather.
I'm kidding, because I know she's listening. She tweeted me that she was listening, so I'm just kind of taking a shot at her. And she has not got the number handy, so she was kind of challenging me to bring up baseball, which I'd already done before I read her tweet. Thank you, ma'am. But, let me just interject this. Bill Battle ain't stupid. He's not Bob Bockrath, who messed with Gene Stallings and ran him off. He's not. He knows Saban is the man, and he knows that Saban really runs that place. Where Bill Battle screwed up was sitting on his hands regarding the basketball situation. He had a chance to make a statement, and he chose not to do it. And I realize some of the reasons that he's given people, but like Heather said last week, I'm not really buying it. But I don't know. First off, I don't really believe the thing about him not being happy about Kiffin. But even if so, I'm sure it was a two-minute conversation. Like, why did you hire him? Because he's a damn good coach. Okay, Roll Tide. I don't think somebody probably making a mountain out of a molehill. He is not going to do anything to mess with Saban. Bill Battle didn't make all the millions of dollars he's made in private business by being a dumbass. Let me just say that. And he knows not to mess with Saban. That would be the only coach there that he knows not to mess with. But he knows not to mess with him. I'm telling you, he knows this.
Yeah, but, you know, Bill Battle's he's got a different opinion, though. You know, he's a self-made millionaire, whether he's a stove product or whatever he did to make his millions, who cares? He's still a self-made millionaire. You know, he really doesn't have to answer to nobody with his money, because money talks. I'm sorry. If you work for somebody and you need the money to get by, you're going to humble yourself. You're going to do whatever it takes to make that job go through where you get paid. I just don't know if Bill Battles is in that same class. I think he's got an attitude. Even watching him, I've watched some of the press conferences he's done. You know, I just don't really – I don't buy in that he's really an Alabama person. I just don't do it. I think he's got an attitude to it. I'm just telling you guys, you watch down the road in the future, especially, if he had the best interest for Alabama, I mean, this program going forward, the whole university, if he had that in mind, he would have fired Grant's ice right off the bat at the end of the game, or the last game. He would have fired him. He would have hired Bruce Pearl. He would not let Auburn got a head start on Alabama and what they done. I hope I'm wrong. I really do, because I love the University of Alabama. I love the athletics of Alabama, period. I hope I'm wrong in the long run. If I am, I will say I'm wrong, but I just don't think I am.
I'll say this, Marty. I get the game programs. And before he got hired as AD, every year he was in there in that top list of people giving Alabama money. So I don't buy this. He's not an Alabama guy. Sorry.
Well, I hope I'm wrong on that, guys.
He played
in
Bear
Bryant.
That's as Alabama guy as it gets.
Yeah, but he spent too much time in Tennessee, Kerry. Too much time in Tennessee.
On the job, Coach Bryant told him to take.
Coach Bryant was just looking at his best interest in Plotter, but when you get to Tennessee, man, things change.
He's 70-something years old.
When Drew comes on, you know, I'd kind of like to, if y'all would bring up some questions about him. You know, is it just a standard practice that a lot of these guys are, you know, some of our long-term recruits are looking around, or do we have something to be worried about?
Nah.
I don't think so.
We should have stopped worrying about recruiting in January of 2007.
Yep.
It's just fun to follow as a hobby now.
I roll back to our little team of Joe Kines that went 10-2, made up of a whole bunch of guys that had no stars behind their names. And it's like we as the Alabama Nation need to remember that it's the five-star kids, four-star kids, three-star kids. It's all wonderful to have them. But then once they get here, it's all how they come together. And I think it was evidenced at the end of the year last year in the Oklahoma game, which Kerry still chides me about, great trip to New Orleans, but gosh, it wasn't to go see a football game.
some good food out of that trip.
Got some great food out of the trip, but the proof in the pudding is here. You've got a team that theoretically coulda, shoulda, woulda been the national champions. That Marty had their asses handed to them down in the Super Bowl, and there's an alchemy and a chemistry that goes on that, you know, there's some magic that happens on top of the stars behind that name, and I've got that picture of Danny's pictures on one of my walls of Brody Croyle from that Cotton Bowl game that we played and beat Texas A&M. And it's one of my favorite Alabama teams of all time because, again, a team of no names, a team that was a bunch of pretty much scrubs by everybody else, came together. And
Steven,
we beat
I'm trying to draw you out some time. Just one second.
Beat Tennessee 6. That's okay. Beat Tennessee 6-3 and on and on and on. So,
well, that team that team laid down against Auburn, and I've just never forgiven them for that.
Well, that's Chris Capps.
But it wasn't just him. he wasn't playing defense.
No, but 7 sacks in a row or something like that. I mean, I'll never get over it. And the bumper sticker that said "Honk if you sack Brody."
Well, Legend is back on with us, Bert.
Oh, Legend.
What you got, Leg?
Hey, I was just listening. I couldn't pick it up on my radio, so I just enjoyed listening to y'all guys.
Okay. Well, I'll just throw you back on hold to listen. I apologize.
We thought you might have had some insight there.
Well, Carrie, we do have another caller, and you had a long conversation with her last week. So I'm going to go on and make Miss Heather live, and she's apparently fired up, so I'm just going to yield the floor to the nice lady.
H-bomb. Oh, my God.
I'm going to drop off.
Good evening, fellas.
Light fuse and run away. Hello. What's up, Heather?
First of all, kudos to Kerry. I had no faith in him, and he proved me wrong.
No, okay.
In speaking about baseball, however, I completely disagree what you're saying about Battle. I think the guy that called in was a little off base. However, it's very apparent that this time next year, this man is not going to give a flip about anything Alabama, and we're going to be suffering through yet another horrible basketball season. This man is a stand-in. I mean, if you look at Jay Barker, did wonders for this university, but he's a horrible advocate for the university. I mean, he can't even research, can't even tell you recruits' names. And I put Bill Battle in the same position. When you do not watch a big conference game, I've got a problem with you. I've got a problem with what he did. I've got a problem with him not standing behind anything. And I've got a major problem with him advocating the fact that we're a quote-unquote football school.
Well, he will get a chance to answer for all that in less than a year. And unless we have a bunch of injuries, we're going to have a decent basketball team next year, more than decent. Bird and I and Thomas could coach them to 20 wins and with the talent they're going to have. Although they do have a pretty tough schedule, but still, they're going to be a lot better than they were this year. Now, I'll admit this, Heather, if Grant don't make the NCAA tournament next year, he will be gone. And I think Battle has told him this.
Well, my goodness. He should have been gone this year. What in the heck does it take?
Amen.
Not making it next year?
Yeah, not making it. And the NIT will not be good enough.
No.
Regardless of the injuries or transfers, whatever, if all he makes is NIT next year,
well, I
then
just,
the
I really don't understand how everybody is hanging their hats on this class coming in. Because there is no guarantee whatsoever. Okay, I look at Saban's classes, and I get excited. Okay, this class rivals 2008. I am so fired up. Cannot wait to see Tony Brown. However, I have no faith in anything Anthony Grant does.
The only
no
thing
faith.
Here's where I'll agree with you, Heather, and I think he's got talent coming in, which is – this is going to sound so wishy-washy because I agree with Kerry – and this is where Kerry and I have gone back and forth a couple of times, there is a chemistry that it takes time for you to get, especially three or four games. I mean, you're not going to get in the practice floor, and you've got to go out and play people. And you bite off a real tough preseason, meaning before you ever get into your conference play, and you can end up losing a lot more than you thought you were simply because you don't have your chemistry set on the basketball team. And because of all the new faces, he damn well – but this is why you pay a head coach
– Calipari doesn't have a problem with new faces. Look what he's doing.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. I'm alluding to the fact that that's why the Calipari's are doing what they're doing and sitting in the Sweet 16 with Rick Pitino and the Jimmy Boeheims, and you start going through that list. And the question I have is, will Coach Anthony Grant ever be listed with the Calipari's, the Pitrinos, not Pitrinos, Pitinos and the Boeheims and Tom Izzo's and on and on and on that are clearly there? Coach K, Coach Krzyzewski. The answer is I don't think so. I really don't. And you know what? I desire that as an Alabama fan. I don't desire to be going to the Cotton Bowl every year. I don't desire to be going to Shreveport. Now, I'll go, you know, if I use a football analogy, because I'll support my team. But, by God, I want to go to the national championship game. I want to go to a relevant bowl. I want to be one of the top in the country.
I want to go to the dance one year. I mean, my goodness,
well, see,
it's been so long, and we've not won at all since he's been here.
You've got to take it further than that, and that's where the NIT is a tease. You know, Carrie, help me on this. We've been to the NIT, three times in the past 5 years?
Yes.
I don't even know because I don't even care. I just know we've been to the big dance one time and we've not won a game.
Well, it's I'm agreeing with you.
And that's a major problem for me.
He's got an uphill.
I'm just so annoyed with Bill Battle right now. I feel like he was a fill-in hire, and I feel like it was going back to the old ways of hiring the good old boys. And it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable. We should have gotten a new forward-thinking athletic director, and we were rolling on Nick Saban's success and did the easy thing again.
Coattailing.
We fall into the same traps. Anytime we have any level of success, we fall into the same traps over and over and over again. I'm so frustrated.
Well,
I agree with you.
Thank you, Gary. Well, I wasn't expecting
that. Was
No, it was Marty. But actually, Carrie does. Carrie does too.
I don't disagree with
thank you, Marty. I wasn't expecting that either, but I especially wasn't expecting from Carrie.
Hey, how about Drew, guys, on Twitter flirting with Heather and Paige like they're his girls and not mine? I'm about to get to fly to Huntsville and whoop me some ass, Drew. I'm just kidding.
Great. The last hour is going to be a battle royale.
That's right.
Yeah.
I came up with a great idea for a new segment in the last hour. Drew or false?
True or false? Clever
questions. And, yeah.
But you know, it's what you're saying, Heather, is that basically Battles come in as an interim for the next AD. Who's that next AD going to be? And I think I know who I would say. But do you think Saban, after he steps down, takes over as the AD for Alabama?
Absolutely not.
No, I do not.
He would not do that to the new head coach of football.
Boy, wouldn't that be terrible. Ugh.
He would not do that.
No, I do not. I do not think that he has the personality type to do that. He is not the fundraiser that let's shake the hands and kiss the babies type.
I tell you who could do that. Well, the Aussies.
That's what I was going to say. That'd be my pick with the Aussies.
Okay, you know, that's funny that you mentioned that because somebody associated with the program, I mentioned that too, and he literally said, shut your face. No.
Well,
he said, we need new blood that has innovative ideas, and we do not need to fall into this good old boy trap again. And
Ozzie Newsome is a good old boy?
Well, he'd be their boy, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know all the football players from, like, the 60s and 70s, they'd be like, oh, yeah, I see what Heather's saying. Now, the guy that's the deputy athletic director now, Shane Lyons, it could be they're grooming him. I don't know. I'm not sure what direction they'll go. Battle was hand by mouth. You know, I won't call it a dying wish, but he was already in the hospital when he was telling people that he wanted Battle to succeed him.
Let me preface this by saying I love Mal Moore. I adore that man. Mal Moore made some horrible mistakes, but he pulled a George Costanza and was like, okay, I'm done. I'm out of here. When he hired
his mom called him? Oh.
I mean, he made some mistakes.
Yeah,
so
he
I'm
did.
Not, because he recommended Bill Battle does not make me feel good about the decision.
But Battle hasn't been horrible. He went out and got one of the better women's basketball coaches in America and brought her to Tuscaloosa. Nobody would have thought he could have gotten Christy Kirk.
Well, how long did it take to get the other one out?
Who, Wendell?
You've got to be kidding me, Carrie. You got to be kidding me. You're still a basketball coach from Texas Tech, which is out in the middle of nowhere, and nobody wants to coach at Texas Tech, and you bring
that
in a coach. She's
yeah,
a good coach, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that it took a lot of convincing her to come from Texas Tech to Alabama.
And Hudson finally got shamed out of it.
And she took a pay cut, number one. And number two, before Texas Tech, she was at Purdue, and she took them to the national championship game and lost.
Well, they need to give her a pay raise this year then.
So, you know, she embraced the challenge to coach in a better conference. But he went out and got her. Whereas we thought he'd go down the road and hire the girl at Shelton State, but he didn't.
She did a great job this year.
So it's not like his whole term has been one F up. It hasn't. Now, you know, we'll see what happens with basketball
next
year.
Feel like
they,
it is.
When they make
hey,
the tournament next year.
I just kind of feel like he is just implementing the fact that he is a stand-in, and we don't need that. I don't care what Saban's doing. I
well,
have other
you know,
programs I care about. I love football. Yes, football is my passion, and that's what I know most about. But I care about the other programs.
Unfortunately, we're in the barn, and the door's closed for basketball season this year. I mean, I've gone back and forth with Kerry. There are some names that when you're watching the tournament, and by the way, without taking us off stream of Alabama, if you guys have at all liked basketball and have watched any of this NCAA tournament, has there been any better sports drama in the last 10 years that anybody can think of other than that first day of the first round of that tournament when teams like Harvard and Dayton and on and on and on were turning around and just bitch-slapping the big boys? I mean, what a
I cannot lie. This has been the funnest tournament I've ever watched, being a five-year-old basketball fan. I'll get to sport right in a second.
I totally agree, Heather.
It's been great. I mean, it's been if you were at all a basketball fan, this has been like sheer heaven. So it's been a fun year. So I'm sorry for taking us offline on the Bama conversation, but I did want to interject that it's been great, and I'm so
excited about seeing Kentucky and Louisville. I'm like, okay.
I was going to say, what a soap opera, what drama. Here we've got an Auburn-Alabama game in basketball about to happen with Louisville and Kentucky, two schools that are separated by about 60 miles that detest each other. I mean,
I think it was just last year. They had the two fans that were having dialysis that were trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, I do.
Come on,
it's
it was the Kentucky and Louisville man.
I saw one sort of like that about Alabama and Auburn, two old men on walkers. So, yeah.
This was a for real story. They were literally in the dialysis clinic, and they started trying to kill each other. And I'm like, see, we're not the only ones.
Oh, yeah. They hate each other.
Unplugging. There it goes. You're squirting all over the floor.
Hey, before I hang up, though, I have to say, we got a real good weekend coming up this weekend, you guys.
Guess who's coming?
It better be my birdie.
I'm coming. I'll be there on Sunday. Well, you know what's fun, and I've told you this, Heather, is I have got a 7-year-old grandson who is – number one, about as big a baseball fan of any little kid I've ever seen. And number two, if it's Alabama, I mean, let's put it this way. Whenever we lost to Auburn, he cried. And, I mean, he gets so up in Alabama sports that, I mean, he really gets emotionally overwrought sometimes. But It is going to be an absolute treat to come down and watch the Crimson Tide play and then be able to take my grandson down at the same time. That's going to be too fun.
I am bringing the camera. I cannot wait to see this because he is going to have a ball. I mean, as kid-friendly, especially on Sundays, as this is, it is the most wonderful experience ever. And I really don't get all the Gaspard haters. I mean, for our facilities to be as horrible as they've been, I think he's done pretty good. I can't wait to see what he does.
Yeah, Heather,
he's much better at baseball than Grant has basketball.
No, but let me ask you guys a question. Who has initiated, which AD initiated the replacement of that stadium? Was it Mal Moore?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
So it was under Mal.
Yes. Initiated. But yeah. Actually put into action, it fell on Battle's shoulders. But Mal initiated it. He did.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we weren't throwing credit where credit wasn't due, and it was Mal Moore that started the process to put us into a new park down there, which is exciting too.
Oh, does that bell mean Drew's
on
hold?
Oh my gosh. I mean, the new park is going to be so awesome, you guys. I mean, really, it's really going to help in recruiting immensely. And the atmosphere there, let me just put it this way. Nick Saban finally has somewhere to take recruits.
Yay. Well, because, you know, that's important. I mean, atmosphere is more important than the park.
Okay, that new right field terrace I've been going on and on about.
Right.
They call themselves the right field Ragers now. They literally look up the other players' names and heckle them the entire game when they're in outfield. And I'm like, you are the greatest fans I've ever seen. I'm adoring this.
It's students that have too much time on their hands.
Whatever, Gary. Don't tell me you haven't done that.
No, that was Bird.
Why do you keep calling other people me?
Yeah, you're banging on Gary. That was the Bird. Oh, my.
You say ignorant stuff like that. I was not being. Are you on like a Walmart cell phone, Heather? You can't tell people's voices apart.
Oh.
Well, my phone's probably the equivalent because it gets beat up that bad, so yes.
Oh, I bet it does during games.
I manage to lose about two or three every football season.
Well, okay. I'll give you that. Well, I have Heather, I had the privilege of having dinner at Paige Hockman's restaurant, Asian Rim, this past Friday and introduced her to my wife and all that. And we have assured her that we will be at the Saturday Auburn game in a couple of weeks. So we're looking forward to that as well.
I'm very excited about that. I want to meet her, too, because you know who my favorite player is.
Georgie Salem.
Oh, love me some Georgie, who had an awesome game last night.
Run triple.
So,
he's had a good year, too.
I totally plan on looking her up this weekend. I want to get her and Ashley to meet up so that Ashley will have some baseball buddies.
Yeah, the fun part was me explaining to her that Coach Ben was Ashley's boyfriend and not yours, but I got it through her hands.
I know. The way she told me.
You look so young, Heather.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, right.
I totally wanted to record that whole part for Ben to make him feel good. And I was like, yeah, no.
Cool.
Well, gentlemen, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I hear that we have Drew DeArmond from AlabamaIntel.com live. Drew, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, guys? Good to be on with you again. Love the setup. Thanks to Bird and Kerry and Thomas and this is a great thing. I look forward to it every Wednesday at 9 o'clock, Roll Tide.
Man, you sound good on that Alesis, baby. I love
it. He did great.
Woo! Drew, he sounds like he's the voice of God sitting behind a cloud.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Well, we got some people in the chat room that think he kind of is. So.
I wouldn't argue that either, but that's a little sacrilegious. But he does sound good.
Yeah, the lowercase, not the
lowercase.
Yeah, so what's going on, Drew?
Not much, brother. Just trying to get work done. Just, you know, trying to analyze best you can for spring practices for our readers and our subscribers. And it's been an interesting first week. I think, obviously, the offensive line, there's been a lot of consternation about that. I think that Coach Cristobal is going to have to earn his money. Obviously, right now, Cam Robinson's had a rough first week. He's running team. That's nothing to be scared of. I think it's really not really surprising for a high school kid. We'll see what kind of moves he makes when they finally scrimmage on April the 5th. But I do think it's interesting that some of the spots I never would have thought you'd see Shank Taylor running first team. I would have thought Grant Hill would have been slid inside. Right now he's a tight tackle. Yeah, a little bit of a rude awakening the first week, even though he's a true sophomore and has seen some action. I know DJ Petway said hello. First rep he got in practice, he knocked Grant on his ass a little bit, guys, but I think Grant still got a lot of talent. And I still look to move inside, but I guess you could say there's a silver lining in a dark cloud. You know, Shank seems to have reshaped his body. He's a huge kid. Maybe he's going to take a step forward. Ari Quanjo has played a lot of football. It's just he was up and down as a junior, but who knows? Maybe he's got a Danny Martz-like senior year in him, but we'll see.
There's one you don't hear every day. Drew, I got to ask you about well, let's start off with the minor thing. Tell us about the story that you guys broke about where Darren Lake has been the first week.
Well, you know, yeah, Darren Lake, it's you know, we still don't know for sure if he's out for spring. We think he is. What we got was he missed the last 2 to 3 practices. He tore a pec muscle. We just don't know how severe the surgery was. The first report we got, and right now what we've heard is he's going to be out 3 to 4 months. We'll be back for fall camp, but that he will not return. But we also had another good source we trust tell us that it might have been minor. He could return for the spring. My gut tells me he will not. They won't chance it. It'll give Jaren Reed a chance to do attention or anything, not what we're hearing. Injured and had surgery and is out right now.
I got to ask, kind of blew me away, Drew. and I realize where it probably originated because of who the owner is, but I read this article today that you wrote. Excellent article, great quotes. But is there really a legitimate chance that Nick Saban will take Brent Callaway back on this team?
No guarantees, Kerry. I just think it's something that, and you can't blame the young man. It's something that, and I think a lot of it has to do, like I mentioned in the article, you know, Brent Callaway still loves Alabama, and he just doesn't want to close the door on that situation. He has not talked to Coach Saban since he left the program. But, you know, the thing about Brent is he does seem – I've talked to him in person, talked to him as I did the interview yesterday on the phone. He's very, very remorseful about what happened. A lot, you know, he sees what his roommate, DJ Petway, did. And DJ Petway was able to take care of business and get back. And now while Brent did not, you know, have the kind of year in junior college that, you know, DJ had, you know, he still thinks he has the talent and the ability to come back to Alabama. And I think he has a niche and a card to play there, guys. I think he was very close to, you know, Mike Groh told an excellent source of mine that he was pushing to be the starting H-back going into 2013, but then ran into the off-field issues. But obviously, DJ Petway played a much bigger role in that situation than Brent Callaway. Callaway had a drug arrest, and then and knowingly used someone's a debit card to purchase some snacks, and he's very remorseful for that. But he didn't play. He was not involved at all in the robberies. He feels like he would like to meet with Coach Saban one more time and see what could happen. It will probably depend on the scholarship situation. Could depend on Bo Scarborough. But I mean, again, he's not going to play defense at Alabama, but he's a guy that would fit at the H fullback spot. He's 6'3 and a half, 237 pounds right now, running under a 4.6 40 yard dash. And as you look at it, you know, Lane Kiffin loves to use the fullback. Nudie Fowler is going into his fifth year. He's a fifth-year senior. And then behind him, you got basically walk-ons. You got Corey McCarron, and you got Michael Nusswinder from Hoover. So you really don't have the numbers there. Yes, they're bringing in Flournoy Smith, but then Nudie Fowler will be gone. And so you got Brent Callaway with 2 years eligibility remaining and not wanting to close the door with Coach Saban. I don't blame him for trying to, you know, he doesn't want to say what if, you know. He wants to look at it one more time, talk to Coach Saban man-to-man, one-on-one, and we'll see what happens. But a lot will probably depend on the number situation after spring football. But I think there is a slight chance for Brent. I think there's a spot for him. But, again, it would have to be at H fullback.
And, you know, talking about recruiting, sounds like that Alabama commitment Chance Wormack had himself a nice little weekend.
Dallas, absolutely. Dallas did have a very nice weekend. You know, the younger brother of Vance, and he's a guy that's going to be a center guard prospect. I'm hearing that he looked a little bit better at guard, but he showed excellent punch and power. He definitely has the Warmack gut. He will be Warmacking, but he can move. He's an excellent prospect. He's still, you know, visiting other schools. He's visited Georgia. But I will say this. I think he's going to end up signing with Alabama. I think that's where his mother wants him. I think that's where Chance wants him. And I think he's a very, very good prospect. He was very good at the NFTC in last high school in Georgia this past Sunday and an invite to the opening. And he's a guy that I think Alabama should be very excited about. Their situation right now at center behind Ryan Kelly. You know, you got Paul Waldrop, a walk-on. Getting second-team reps, also a redshirt freshman in Bradley Bozeman and even Grant Hill. So it's unsettled there, and so they need a talent infusion there, and I think J.C. Hassenauer and Joshua Casher will provide that, but they won't be there until the summer.
Hmm. You know, and speaking about the firmness of commitments, why don't you update the listeners on what's going on with Jonathan Ledbetter?
Well, Jonathan Ledbetter is, you know, he's heavily considering Georgia. He's been on a couple of visits there. His mother, you know, visited Alabama with him, and she gave her blessing, but she's also visited UGA. I believe he's about to visit Auburn as well. He showed up at the NFTC with Georgia gear on. He was just coming off a visit there. I think he likes Mark Richt a lot. Been some speculation from Kip Adams and others in the recruiting industry that they think he could flip to Georgia, but I think it's early, and we'll see about that. I don't necessarily believe that yet. I think he needs to get back on campus at Alabama, and with Elijah Shaw enrolling at Alabama, I still think that gives Alabama a very good chance. But again, you've got to continue to recruit these kids, and Georgia's going to be a force, especially with Jeremy Pruitt over there. He's a very good defensive mind and a very good recruiter, so it's going to be a battle, but I think right now it's definitely UGA and Alabama for Ledbetter, and Ledbetter says right now he's committed, so we will see. But I think a lot of it's going to be they need to get him back on campus again, and especially for the A-Day game.
Do we know if he'll be there before A-Day at all?
He's talked about returning before then, but he's definitely supposed to be there for A-Day. We'll see. I think it's big if they could get him back on campus before A-Day, but there's no confirmation of that as of this time.
We get questions every week about Jacob Coker. He's apparently coming to every Saturday practice. He apparently has some DVDs of the offense as well as the entire playbook to look at. You know, is there anything else he could be doing that he's not doing now to learn this offense?
not really, at least not legally. I think, you know, Jacob's doing all he can. You know, so far in the first week, I did a piece on the quarterbacks. You know, we're hearing the two guys that have stood out are Blake Sims and Parker McLeod. That would kind of be a surprise to some. Cooper Bateman's really struggled. We'll see what happens when the scrimmages, when the bullets start going live with a guy like Alec Morris, whose clock is ticking. But I think right now the favorite would have to be of the five guys. It would have to be Blake Sims. Right now, David Cornwell, the most upside of all those guys, but he's just throwing with H-back and the tight end, going to be brought along slowly. But again, people also, like I've said on some other shows as well, the thing you have to remember is Blake Sims was recruited by Lane Kiffin at Tennessee, flipped to Tennessee for a month, came back to Alabama. So Lane is familiar with Blake Sims. He's got the trust of the coaches a little bit. I'm going to be interested to see how he performs in the scrimmage. My gut tells me it's going to be a two-man show, and it's going to be Jacob Coker and Sims, with Coker winning the job side. You know, got a very good source last week, and he tells me he saw Jacob Coker practice on more than one occasion at Florida State. Every time he watched him practice, he would come back and think, how is he not at Alabama? Well, he is now, and he's going to have a lot of upside to him. It's a little dangerous because he's never played more than mop-up duty, but I just really think Jacob Coker has the skill set they're looking for. And when Lane Kiffin tells you that he's like signing an NFL free agent, I think obviously you'd have to favor Jacob Coker when he comes in. We can wait a second and be there by May the 3rd, but he will be, at more than one spring practice from here on out. And, of course, he will probably be there on A-Day.
Another recruit I wanted to ask you about, since we haven't talked about him yet on this show, Destrehan, Louisiana wide receiver Kurt Merritt. What do we know about him?
He's an athlete, Kerry. He's a great-looking kid. He's a guy Alabama's recently offered. He's got good size. He plays all over the place for those guys, but I think he really translates to a wide receiver. And I think, you know, it's another case of, you know, Billy Napier and Burton Burns doing a great job in the state of Louisiana. Merritt's film's impressive. Obviously LSU will definitely be a factor there as well. But I think Alabama, if they've already got Charlotte, you know, they've already, committed to him from the 2015 class. He was one of the, you know, the first commits. And he committed at the first junior day. So they've done a very good job recruiting there. And it's going to be interesting to see the pecking order at wide receiver, but I think Kirk Merritt is definitely a guy they're very, very interested in.
Is it fair to say that it's time for one of Heather's favorite players, Chris Black, and also another one that hasn't seen the field at all yet, Robert Foster? Is this their time to shine?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. That's going to be the exciting part of the scrimmages. Robert Foster, I think he's a first-round talent, but he has not – the limited touches he gets, you know, he had seven touches last year, and I think he had three TDs, so he showed some explosion. He could bring some explosion to the slot receiver position. I said today on another show this afternoon, I feel like that, you know, another guy that can make plays in the slot that Lane Kiffin's going to use as a versatile guy to get him on the field, providing he's still on the football team and he can stay out of trouble, is Kenyon Drake. And I think Kenyon Drake could definitely make plays in the slot at receiver and also continue to be used at running back. But I think that obviously you really want to see Thunder and Hurricane, as I would call them, you know, T.J. Yeldon and King Henry get most of those reps. But, I mean, I just think Kenyon Drake is too talented. You got to find him a role. And I think those three guys could be as good a 1-2-3 punch as Nick had at running back. Mm.
Drew, I know you keep up with this kind of stuff, but just touching briefly on basketball recruiting, the Alabama boys beat the Mississippi boys in their annual All-Star game 90-83 last Friday night in Jackson. And Alabama signee Riley Norris was named the MVP of the game by scoring 16 points, 9 rebounds, and 3 assists. And in those 16 points, he missed almost half his free throws, so he didn't do that great at the foul line, but good to see a young man that I like to nickname the Raging Caucasian have a good game over there in Jackson.
And no doubt, Kerry, I call him Chandler Parsons Jr. I think he's a very, very good player. I think he can fit well in Alabama's system. I've always said if you surrounded him with talent, he could be a big-time asset. You know, he stepped up in that game. There was no Justin Coleman who did not play in the game, and I think Riley, it was very exciting to see him win the MVP and his team to win the game. Devin Booker, you know, the Kentucky signee from Mississippi, Alabama recruited him, but he scored 31 for the other side. But the biggest thing is to get the W, and it was a nice performance from Riley. He's a good all-around player. He can rebound. He had to play in the post for Albertville this whole year, so he can block shots and rebound, even though that's really not going to be his forte at Alabama. But he's a good rebounder, kind of like a Rodney Cooper type. Rodney's a pretty good rebounder at Alabama from the wing position. Hopefully he'll shoot the ball more consistently than Rodney, and I think he will. He's a very good shot, and he's also a very good passer. And the biggest thing about him is he's a team guy. He's a coach's kid, and he's unselfish, and I just think he's a great kid. His dad's a great guy, and he's going to be a big-time asset to Alabama basketball along with Justin Coleman and my personal favorite, Devin Mitchell, who needs to get stronger, but can, as Dickie V says, he can shoot the rock.
Another question from the chat room, Drew. Assuming that he gets eligible, how will Kiffin and Alabama use Bo Scarborough?
I think they're going to use him in a versatile role, guys. I think he's going to be a guy that can be sort of a jumbo Kenyon Drake. I think he's somebody that could even play the H or tight end position and be a mismatch with linebackers. I think he's somebody, of course, that could play running back. In some formations, he could be a Roy Upchurch type and line up at fullback and just be a nightmare as far as a pass receiver, or even if he does lead block. But I think the biggest thing is he could also be a guy that could run out of a split backfield. I think Bo has the hands where you could even stick him out wide at wide receiver. So I think he's a guy that could project in almost any offensive position. And I think as long as he continues to recover from his knee injury, if he can get some of his burst back, which he seemed to be doing his senior year at IMG, I think Bo Scarborough, should he qualify academically, could be an ultimate weapon now. He's got a lot of guys in front of him. Could he end up redshirting, especially if it takes until August to get eligible, which it may very well. We hear he can take 2 to 3 summer classes and be a la LaRon McClain and Robert Foster last year. Yes, that could very well happen, but ultimately still, Bo Scarborough is a supreme athlete and can be an offensive weapon and be very versatile, in my opinion.
Is it fair to say, and I know it's really early, four practices. But is it fair to say Tony Brown has really caught Nick Saban's eye?
No. When you're a true freshman, Kerry, and now again, the proof in the pudding is going to be when the pads go on. I was talking to a former player today, and we were talking about that. But for a guy right now that has not had the pads on, he's gone through the fourth quarter program, not been throwing up, been, you know, in great shape, and that's counting running track as well. But when you're watching practice video and Nick Saban keeps saying, attaboy Tony Brown, and there's no expletives, that's a great job by that young man. And he looks like right now he could push for a starting job at corner, you know, opposite Eddie Jackson, even though we also hear Cyrus Jones has had a good camp. A little bit nervous about Cyrus Jones' size, but he's a guy that should know the scheme inside and out. But, again, I think right now the biggest thing is that you need Tony Brown to step up because, I use this these two words, and it's putting a lot of pressure on the young man. But the word we were getting out of Beaumont, Texas, is Tony Brown has Deion Sanders-type talent. And I think Deion is the greatest cover corner. Did he like to tackle? No. But as he used to say, I'll tell everybody, I don't get paid to tackle. And I think, you know, Tony Brown can tackle, though. And I think Tony Brown has got a chance to make a huge impact. Now, Marlon Humphrey can come in and do the same thing when he comes in the summer. But also, you also got to check out Hootie Jones. He's looked very good so far in the spring. And that's big because with Alabama losing Benny Sunseri and Ha-Ha Clinton Dix and Nick Perry coming off an ACL, you're going to need some safeties to step up for depth purposes. And so far, Hootie Jones has done a very nice job through a week of practice.
Yeah, you mentioned Grant Hill and his struggles, but who wouldn't struggle trying to block DJ Pettway? But
he's a pro, guys. No doubt.
I know. I agree. Is it fair to say that D-liner is struggling a little bit too?
A little bit, and I think he was a guy coming out of Muscle Shoals High School who, you know, kind of played when he wanted to play, you know. And I think it's not surprising that he's struggling a little bit, but let's also understand, I think the defensive line, wide receiver, and running back are probably the three most talented groups on Alabama's football team. And then you got, in my opinion, it's not too early to say you signed two future pros out of junior college. And I just really think, you know, with Jaron Reed and DJ Pettway, those two guys can really play. And then you've got guys like Jonathan Allen and A'shaun Robinson. And I'll give you all some more intel on A'shaun Robinson. Same source that told me about Jacob Coker told me if the NFL draft, they did not have the three and out rule where you had to stay 3 years, and they had a one and done for college football. A'shaun Robinson, who he said is 19 going on 30, and I said, looked like Kimbo Slice, would have been a first-round draft pick.
He what the fellas call a grown-ass man.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Another question from chat, Drew. If a transfer occurs among the running back core, who would you guess it might be?
Tyron Jones. I think, you know, Alti Tenpenny and Jones are the first two that come and do a thought there. And, you know, had some issues on it. When I first got to Alabama, you know, we hear his attitude's improved, but he's still running fifth in the line right now. He's a very talented kid. A lot of people said, you know, Nick Saban thought he was the best of the crew of the four guys they signed with Tenpenny, Kamara, and Derrick Henry. But he's, you know, been kind of buried on the depth chart. He wants to play, and so does Alt Tenpenny. And quite frankly, Alt is good enough to start at several other SEC schools. If he had gone to Arkansas, he would be running neck and neck to me with Alex Collins, but, you know, the bottom line is that they're behind talented players. I mean, T.J. Yeldon, he did fumble last year, guys. Yes, he lost five fumbles, but let's not get it twisted. He had 1,235 yards, 14 TDs, and averaged 6 yards a carry, and he's rushed for more yards in 2 years than any back in Alabama history, and he played hurt last year. So, you know, he still had a really, really solid year, and let's be honest, King Henry is a unique talent. You know, he's hopefully the Cam Newton of running backs. And once he bought into the process of studying film and preparing, everybody saw what he did against Oklahoma. Talked to a great source in Oklahoma last night, and that's all he kept raving about was, we just thank the Lord that they quit giving Henry the ball in the Sugar Bowl because we couldn't handle him. We had never even seen him before. We're like, who is this guy? And then, you know, he's like, T.J. Yeldon, he goes, our guys could get a hand on him and slow him down. Derrick Henry ran through it like it didn't even bother him. And he was like, we'd never seen anybody that big move that well laterally and accelerate. And so, you know, it's unbelievable with the 2 years Yeldon has had, but he's going to have to fight for his job. And Derrick Henry is a guy that's coming. And then you got Kenyon Drake, who is a unique talent. Kenyon has the best first step and is the most explosive kid I've seen in the Nick Saban era. But the problem is he's explosive too, and that's been a problem.
The question came last hour, and I gave my take. But I'd like to get your take, Drew. How exactly is Lane Kiffin meshing so far?
I think the players like him a lot. You know, I think they like that he simplified the offense. I think Lane is a more laid back coach. I think he can crack jokes every now and then. He'll lay the law down when he has to. But he likes to explain things in the meeting room. He likes to, you know, make sure everybody's on the same page. And I think his strength as a coach is two things. I think he's a very good recruiter, and then I think he's an excellent game planner. And I think by that he'll get the guy – he'll keep everybody happy, spread the football around. And I think so far on the field he's done a nice job.
And you guys, you and William Barger gave a great example. And Bird had asked earlier what I meant by simplifying the offense. If there's two ways to call a running play. You can say – what they said under Nussmeier and under even under McElwain, yellow left echo, H exchange, Z cross, Y split, 42-3-11, or you can say I right toss 48. What would you rather hear?
I right toss 48.
Yeah, I'm right.
My head hurts with the other one.
Yeah. So another question from chat. Besides Christian Jones, who are the other candidates at punt returner and kickoff returner? I'll fill that in.
Well, I think I would look at a guy like Kenyon Drake to get him on the field. I think he could be very explosive, especially at kickoff return. I think Tony Brown will be a guy that gets some looks. And when he gets on campus, I think Marlon Humphrey will also get looks, as well as Chris Black. I think those guys are some guys you could definitely see. You know, Cyrus Jones did it his freshman year, but I think those other guys are a little bit more explosive. And I think those are some guys that you could easily see on the return units.
I'd be curious to know, how much do you think Marlon Humphrey will push Cyrus?
It's going to depend on mental retention, Kerry. I think it hurts him a little bit that he wasn't there in the fall. And, you know, he was well coached at Hoover High School. That's well documented. He comes from a football family. He's a very smart kid. But the bottom line is he needs to get bigger and stronger, and then schematically he's going to have to catch on. I mean, Tony Brown will be ahead of the curve there. Cyrus is going to have almost 2 years, a year and a half of studying the defense. And the bottom line is that because of Coach Saban's scheme being so complicated, I was talking to somebody yesterday, it takes 2 to 3 years sometimes for these guys to get everything down. Because that was one of Brent Callaway's issues when they moved him to linebacker. He played some linebacker and rushed the passer at Russellville High School. But then you have an NFL playbook. And on every play, Kerry, for the inside and outside linebackers, from what I understand, there is at least 5 checks you got to go through for every play call. And so a lot of times it can make your head spin, and that's the way it was with Brent having to think too much because it's just so complicated because Brent had the athletic ability, but it's just sometimes – and right now I'm going to be honest with both of y'all. I talked to a former player today. Right now at inside linebacker, you got Trey DePriest and 3 guys right now that still don't know what's going on. Sean Hamilton is expected. He's a true freshman, early enrollee. But the other two, one's been there 3 years, and the other's been there over a year, and their heads are still swimming. So that's going to be a huge part of the scrimmages and of this spring into the fall for Reggie Ragland and Reuben Foster to get going and get enough down mentally where they can earn the trust of the coaches and make plays, because both of them are talented, especially Reuben Foster. But right now, Reuben and Reggie are still kind of swimming mentally.
Drew and Bird and I get to see the scrimmage on the 5th of April.
And so will another person that's a very good friend of mine, very, very dear to my heart. She will be there as well. Tiffany Hall, listening from Noonan, Georgia, will be there as well.
Get her in. Okay. Anyway.
And she will make her BAMS radio debut after A-Day, is what I've been told.
Why are you holding her till after A-Day?
That was her decision. That was her decision. And now what she says goes, guys.
Yeah. I've seen her picture, and I agree with that. Now, on April 5th, you're saying she's coming to the scrimmage?
Yes, she is.
Does she realize that she owes me a hug?
She will. I already told her that's probably going to be.
You got an agent now.
I have the best agent in the world. Yes, I do.
Oh, wow. Oh, me. Well, you know, I almost forgot what I was going to ask you. But in the early part of that last answer, which was great, thank you, you mentioned Hoover High and the coach and Marvin Gotten on. I don't know why, but a lot of us thought Christian Bell was going to commit to Alabama this past weekend.
Well, you know, somebody else in my industry was hinting at that, and I read that in one of his posts, and so I thought that might happen. He gets a lot of intel from Hoover, but it obviously didn't. William and I think that both him and Darrell Williams will have to earn it at camp. They still have offers, but they have camp offers. Even Bell, who I really, really love, but I think both those guys are probably going to have to earn them at camp. I would think Bell would be ahead of the pecking order with Darrell Williams, who said this week that Alabama and Auburn were his top two, and Auburn was probably recruiting him the hardest, despite the fact in Georgia it lasted or he had an Alabama hat on. But, you know, but I just think right now both those guys are camp offers. Very good prospects, really like both young guys. I'm still not sure that Alabama is going to push for Bradarick Shaw. We will see a lot of speculation that they're going to be a package deal. But, I mean, who knows? But I think Shaw's a very good athlete. He might not be a running back in college, but we'll have to see.
Well, if they're a package deal, they'll end up like at State. I don't think they're a package deal. I think Alabama's going to push hard for Christian Bell because that guy can get to the quarterback, Drew.
Oh, yeah, Christian Bell, I love Bell. He's got the long arms. He plays with leverage. He's got a nasty attitude. He's a guy that, you know, he absolutely would be a really good Jack linebacker. Could grow into a defensive end, but bottom line, he can rush the passer. And, you know, I love his Twitter moniker, Bell Ringer. I think it's perfect. I think he's a really good player. You hear a lot of good things about him. Hope to talk to the young man soon, but he's a great football player. I thought on film he was the best prospect of the three, but I thought Darrell, you know, he put his best film out last. He played at a very, very high level against Auburn High School and Rayshon Evans in the Super Six, had double-digit tackles, and he's a guy that can move. He's a Sam linebacker type. I also like Keaton Anderson from Florence. He can run rather well, too. He's gotten a lot of good offers lately. I think Southern California and Miami have offered him. But he comes from a lineage of Vol fans. He hasn't committed to Tennessee as of yet. I think he likes Alabama a lot, but he's another one that's going to have to come to camp. And I love your boy, Kerry. I watched 12 minutes of film right now. Richard McBride is stating Kentucky are his top two. I think that's because his offer from Bama is a camp offer, but I hope he comes to camp because that sucker can cover. He can move. And I just became Facebook friends with him, and he's got on his Facebook page, he did a 350-pound power clean. So the guy's strong as a bull, and he's a really good prospect. And I hope to see him. I hope he comes to Alabama to perform in front of Coach Saban and the staff because I think he's a kid in the top 10 to 12 prospects in the state that's going to be a comer when the fall gets here. I think he'll be a high four-star prospect at the least.
Well, my thing about Richard is he's so good in coverage, and you got to have that against these spread teams. You got to have somebody who can cover people out of the backfield, but at the same time not come up when you think the quarterback crossed the line just because all the linemen are downfield. You got to stay on your man. But anyway, all right, question from chat. I don't even know why we're going to address this, but what do you think of Jeremy Fowler saying Bama will only win 8 games?
You know, that's hard to say, guys. Anything can happen if they have injuries at the wrong spots. But, I mean, Alabama's had a lot of injuries the last 2 years, and they've won, you know, 25 football games, and they've been able to overcome. Now, right now, at inside linebacker, you know, at safety, at corner, right, they don't really have the depth they want. They don't really have proven depth at offensive line. And, of course, they're trying to work out the quarterback situation. But I think they still have one of the most talented rosters in America. And with the way the schedule sets up, Kerry, it would have to be 15 injuries if they're only going to win 8 games. Because obviously, I think they still have a great coaching staff. And I think almost worst case scenario, it's 10 wins. I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I think with the way the schedule sets up, they got a very good chance. And right now, LSU has more, you know, questions than Alabama, still a very talented roster. But then, and Texas A&M has no Johnny Football. And then you've got Auburn, who will now be the hunted instead of the hunter. So let's see how they react. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. I think Alabama still should be, you know, the favorite to me in the Western Division. It's not Auburn, but Auburn has a lot of questions as well. Trey Mason's a very tough guy to replace. Greg Robinson, one of the best tackles in the country. Dee Ford, one of the best pass rushers. So we'll see there. But, you know, I think right now Alabama would have to be up there as far as a favorite in the SEC, no question.
Another question, not counting nickel or dimeback, just the two true cornerbacks. Who do you say the two are against West Virginia?
West Virginia, Eddie Jackson and Cyrus Jones, with Tony Brown playing about as much as the other two. I think that will be your top three corners, and I think Tony Brown's going to continue to improve. Hopefully, Cyrus Jones has stepped his game up. And I think there's still a chance with the entirety of the summer and fall camp. You could see Marlon Humphrey getting some repetitions. But I think a very important guy that's a hybrid in this situation is Geno Smith. He's got a chance, I think, to be a player. I thought at the end of his freshman year against Georgia and Notre Dame, he was playing at a very high level. Then he decided to do some stupid things off the field and dig a hole for himself. But I think he has a chance to be a really good football player. And then you've got veterans like Jarek Williams, Nick Perry, and Landon Collins. And a little bit surprising right now, Nick Perry running first team at free safety. I still think Jarek Williams can move back over there, but we'll see as of right now.
Another question from chat. What impact do you feel like the two new members, who are really old members of a defensive coaching staff, Kevin Steele and Bo Davis, have this year?
So I think Bo Davis is going to make a big impact from what we've heard so far. He's trying to deprogram a lot of the defensive linemen. I think that he's trying to improve the pass rush. He's working with them on their swim moves, their hand placement, and their fundamentals. I think he can make an impact. I'm going to be honest, guys. The proof's in the pudding. How many NFL guys on the defensive line did Rump put out compared to Bo? There's a huge difference. You know, there were still a couple guys like Damian Square and Quentin Dial that came out in the 2 years after Bo left, but there wasn't Brandon Dederick, Marcel Darius, you know, Darius, of course, being a top three pick and was a great talent. I mean, you know, you didn't have – and Josh Chapman, because I'm going to give him Chapman, and you could even say Square. A lot of the guys were all developed by Bo Davis. They put a bunch of guys in the NFL, and to me, the production level was going down. Terrence Cody, I mean, the production level went down after Bo left, and I think it's going to crank back up. And I think Kevin Steele, the proof's in the pudding. When you work for Tom Osborne, Bobby Bowden, and Nick Saban, you know what you're doing as an assistant coach. He's also coached on the NFL level, and hopefully he can help bring Reuben Foster and Reggie Ragland along with Trey DePriest, who's really stepped up as a leader.
Drew, you still good to stick with us till 10?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to take a break now. It's 35 minutes after the hour. You're listening to BAMS Radio. We'll be back in a few with more from Drew DeArmine.
So, what makes BAMS Tailgate so darn special?
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com, and ask for Billy or call 251-247-1169 to order.
We'll be right back. You're back on BAM's Radio. Kerry Clark, Calhoun, Thomas Watts, and Drew DeArmond with you here for at least about 21 more minutes. And we're talking Alabama spring practice, Alabama recruiting, and, of course, we'll get the callers this hour. Bird, why don't you give them that call-in number?
Crickets.
You might have been muted. We had a little echo earlier. The call number you want to take in is 714-510-3707. We have open lines, and we would absolutely love to hear from you. Anyway, back to you.
Sorry, Kerry, I was muted.
No problem. That's really good. Bird, do you have any questions, Drew?
You know, Drew, is working together in practice. Does our schedule the first year help us as we start putting this team together? Because all I see is we're not playing exactly the toughest of schedules, and by mid-season when we start rounding into our what I call quote-unquote our real competition, I think to me it sounds like we're going to have all these answers resolved, plus we're going to have an awful lot of depth.
Well, you know, Bird, I think that there's a chance for that to happen. I just think, as I said, I think the biggest thing is you just don't want injuries in key situations, but I think the offensive line is going to be the biggest key. And I think, you know, obviously it's going to be big to get off to a nice start against West Virginia and Atlanta and regain some confidence after really they didn't perform very well on either side of the football and in special teams the last two games against Oklahoma and Auburn and really the last month with Mississippi State. So it's going to be key to get off to a good start. And I think, you know, West Virginia will be a good test because they run a lot of the spread, hurry-up type stuff. And I think it'll be good to get out there and play and hopefully make plays. And, you know, what you'd like to see is Jacob Coker get off to a fast start and gain some confidence if he is, in fact, the QB, and I think he will be. But, and then you just – obviously the anticipation is going to be with Derrick Henry. You know, how is Derrick Henry – what kind of role is he going to continue to build upon what he did in the Sugar Bowl?
Is it possible that what we could have this year is a team that actually has more depth on it based on the way things are rolling out now in spring practice?
It could. I think they have a chance to be almost three deep on the defensive line. I think, you know, I think obviously inside linebacker is an issue. You know, I think outside linebacker, I think I'm hearing good things about Tim Williams. Obviously, I think Dylan Lee and Trey DePriest are having the two strongest weeks at inside linebacker, or outside linebacker, pardon me. And I think, you know, they need Denzel Deval to be a little bit more productive, need to get some more out of Ryan Anderson. But I think, obviously, that depth situation will improve with freaks like Rayshon Evans and Christian Miller reporting. But I just think, honestly, they need to develop depth at the cornerback spot, and they need to develop a little bit of depth at safety. But I think they could have a lot more depth in some spots. I think they'll be very talented on the offensive line, but inexperienced. And like I said, you know, Mario Cristobal is going to have to earn his money because, honestly, and the biggest thing is don't get Ryan Kelly injured, because right now Paul Waldrop is the backup, and then you've got two guys that are young players in Grant Hill and Bradley Bozeman taking reps, and then you'll have Casher and Hassenauer. You need Kelly to be the veteran and be the anchor and stay healthy for a full season. He got nicked up some last year, but I think he's a supreme talent now that Chad Lindsey has decided to move on. And it's going to be interesting because when Dominic Jackson gets there, I still think he's going to be one of the best five, and it's just where is he going to be? I think the two spots, center and right tackle, are cemented, and then he'll either be at left tackle, and that's where I'm leaning right now unless Cam Robinson really improves or unless Leon Brown proves to have a great spring. And the scrimmages will tell that tale, but I think he will be at one of the guard spots or left tackle. And, you know, I hear from the coaches, they think he's good enough to be one and done. So we'll see, but Dom Jackson will definitely be one of the five, in my opinion.
One person that you haven't mentioned yet that I have a keen interest in is Geno Smith. What kind of practice is he having?
Yeah, I mentioned him before we went on the break. Geno is very important. I think, you know, right now Jarek is still at the nickel spot. I think Geno could end up being there, or he could make a run at free safety. He's been moved to safety. He was last year, but he's a hybrid guy. He's got some cornerback ability. I think as long as he stays out of trouble and studies, I felt like at the end of his freshman year against Georgia and Notre Dame, he was the missing piece. They had kind of struggled there. He had better coverage ability than Benny Sunseri, who went to his more natural strong safety spot last year before getting injured and leaving the program. So I just think really Geno Smith is a wild card, so to speak, and has a chance to solidify the secondary either in the nickel package or in the regular package, because I don't think Nick Perry is long-term a solution at free safety. And I think Landon will be the strong. So it's going to be interesting to see what kind of spring Geno Smith has, because the time is now for him to step up, no doubt.
Question from the chat. Any word on how the punting and place kicking is looking so far this spring?
No word yet, guys. And that's going to be something you take care of in the scrimmages. I still think more than likely my gut instinct would tell me that the punting job will be decided when the two freshmen get there, J.K. Scott and Tuck Boree. I think they're going to be your two guys. I know there's a walk-on from Spain Park who's a true freshman as well, and another from another kid they redshirted last year that came in from Mexico, from Monterrey, Mexico. But, I mean, I think, honestly, that those guys will be the – I think the coaches are planning on them being the favorites. You never know. And to be honest, I've got to think Adam Griffith. I'm going to be very interested to see how he does in live scrimmage situations. But I think Adam Griffith is the heavy favorite at kicker.
Very good, very good, very good. Well, let's see. What have we not covered so far? How about, well, let's see, we already covered that. Thomas, what are your questions for Drew?
Those listen lines are open, by the way. We'd love to have you call in while we're shuffling our paper back here at BAMS. Give us a call, talk to Drew DeArmond or Kerry Clark, and we'll see if we can answer you right here live, or if you just got commentary.
Well, I was curious, what are you looking for? I know junior days and camps are in full swing. Is there a big storyline coming up in the next week or so in terms of Bama recruiting that you have any insight on?
Guys, I still think the biggest – you know, anybody can commit at any time. You know, you never know that. But I think the big headline is going to come – you know, the May evaluation period is obviously coming up, and they're going to continue to scour the nation. But I think the biggest thing will be in early June when the first elite camp happens. And you're going to see guys hopefully come to camp to try to turn those camp offers into legit offers and be given an opportunity to pull the trigger. I mean, you never know. There was a lot of rumors about Christian Bell. You know, there's been rumors about Jovan Robinson, but I think a lot of guys are going to wait. And I think Alabama, they've got 8 commitments so far, but they're going to be selective in who they take. And again, you know, and then you'll have guys like Kerryon Johnson, who said he's going to commit this summer. So, you know, he's somebody else that a lot of people will be watching. And then, of course, it's going to be interesting to watch the saga of Deron Payne with Alabama and Auburn. And I think that's easily his top two. But I think the camp situation is going to be the next time it really amps up. And, of course, A-Day. I mean, there's always seems to be one or two at A-Day who they give the green light to help with publicity and momentum. So I'm sure the visitors list for A-Day is going to be epic. Hope to get a chance to check out a lot of those prospects in person. You know, we'll have an excellent photographer with me. She should do a great job. And so it will be interesting to see what happens at A-Day. Got to see a lot of guys last year. As a matter of fact, that's when I first met Tony Brown. Very impressive from that young man to see him up close. Also, Reuben Foster and Bo Scarborough, you know, two monsters. So, I mean, obviously, A-Day will be big in the recruiting process as well.
Well, it kind of dovetailing off of that. And I realize, again, that this is early in the evaluation process. Is there a can't-miss prospect on Alabama's board in the 2015 cycle?
A can't-miss prospect. To me, guys, you know, I've seen him since he was a freshman, and I think Kerryon Johnson, I know he's had injury issues. He's had both of his labrums operated on. He's had an ankle issue. But trust me, when you watch the tape and then when you see him in person, I've heard some people criticize 3A football in Alabama, but the bottom line is they're in one of the toughest 3A regions in Alabama, and then they play Coleman, and then they're going to play Briarwood Christian. And they're going to play. I think they're going to play Blackman out of Tennessee this year. I mean, they play a really good out of region competition. You know, they're going to play Leeds. They played Tanner. And if anybody has seen the Tanner Rattlers, I don't care if they're 2A or not. I mean, they're very, very talented. Their coach LaRon White is the son of the legend Lewis White, former Alabama offensive lineman, has built a dynasty at Tanner High School, has won the last two 2A championships, lost 48-6 last year in the opener to Madison Academy, and said it was the best 3A team he'd ever seen. Then they ran the table 13 straight and won another championship. So bottom line is Madison Academy under Eric Cohue has built a great program over there. They don't dodge anybody. They play whoever will play them. And, you know, Kerryon Johnson to me and Daron Payne, I think Kerryon is more of a sure thing than Payne. I think Payne is a guy that's supremely strong and can be a great football player, but his motor has to run all the time. He has to get fundamentally better, but he has huge upside. But Kerryon Johnson is a guy that, and Alabama's in a dogfight with Florida State because of family connections there. But Kerryon Johnson, to me, could be a great player on either side of the football. Personally, I like him at safety because I think he has Ed Reed-like instincts. But, of course, right now he's being recruited as a running back, and Lane Kiffin is trying to sell him on a Reggie Bush-type role at Alabama.
Question from chat. Since it appears now that our Darius Stewart's going to end up on offense, will he get any decent playing time at receiver?
Could happen, Terry, but he's fighting an uphill battle right now. I mean, I guess you would say he could be in the top seven, but you forget about Raheem Falkins. And I think, to be honest, you know, running back and wide receiver are the two, you know, have the most depth on the football team, and Alabama's done a great job recruiting to those spots. I mean, I do think, and don't forget Cam Sims, who's a legit 6'5", true freshman, early enrollee, and then you'll have Derek Keefe come in the fall. But I think Keefe and Sims will redshirt. And to be honest, I unless he goes out and beats somebody out, I kind of hope they do the same thing with Raheem Falkins to save a year of eligibility this year, because I think they have enough talent to get by now that Robert Foster did redshirt. But, I mean, I just think right now – that wide receiver, I think Ardarius Stewart is a supreme talent, but I just think right now it's going to be a tough road because there's a lot of talented football players in front of him.
Yeah, Raheem is kind of a mystery to me. Sometimes he looks like a stud, and sometimes I think I'm watching Terry Givens.
Yeah, you know, I think he can play. I was impressed with him last spring, but there are a lot of, he's going up against a lot of talented football players, and it's going to be interesting to see how he performs in the scrimmages.
Yep, and we'll be able to check that out on April the 5th, Drew. I'll try not to crowd you this time. I know you're going to have to cut me. I'll still saw other boys. But, Lord, Bert appreciated the Terry Givens mention.
I got a little bit of news from Cecil Hurt, guys. Looks like Alabama's offered another basketball prospect, Malik Beasley, who's also got offers from Kansas State and Vanderbilt. So, you know, the beat goes on. If they don't sign two players, I'll be surprised. They've made a lot of offers. And to me, it means goodbye Carl and goodbye Nick Jacobs. But or maybe Algie Key. We'll see. But they're offering a lot of players, and it's going to be interesting. I think they obviously confirmed this week they're going to get a visit from Jackson Davis, and Justin Garrett will likely visit as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens on the basketball side of things.
Yeah, I think they're going to take two big men late. I didn't read Cecil's tweet yet. What's the size on this kid?
There's no size yet. I just read the kid's name. It came across my feed, and they said Kansas State Vanderbilt had offered first, and now Alabama has. So we will see with Malik, try to find out some intel on the young man, see what his vitals are. But I just found out about this from Alex Klein of the Hoop Scoop.
What is Malik's last name?
Beasley.
I'm going to look it up right now. One of y'all asked Drew a question while I look this up.
Well, I was in the process of looking up Malik Beasley, but go ahead. Go Mercer Bears.
He is Malik Beasley is a 6'3 shooting guard. He weighs 180 pounds from Alpharetta, Georgia, St. Francis School. He played AAU for the Atlantic Celtics.
Good job, Malik. Thomas Watt.
Not really a position of
need. Rock brings the lumber.
And I guess everybody can see me. Everybody said, go Mercer Bears. I'm decked out head to toe in Duke Blue Devils gear. I am a diehard, despite the fact we fell flat on our faces in the first round. But, hey, you know,
I've got a question for you, Drew. I mean, did they just quit with 3 minutes left? Because it looked to me like the team quit. It looked like Coach K quit.
I haven't criticized Coach K many times in my 38 years on this planet, but I thought he got out-coached. You know, I really did. I could not believe they quit attacking the basket with Jabari Parker, Rasheed Suleiman, Rodney Hood. Yeah, Rodney Hood played horrific basketball.
I don't think they put in Suleiman's hands enough. He could have been the key to that for Duke, and I just didn't think he touched the ball enough.
The other key to the game was the Mercer head coach, like Barnes from Dallas.
Yeah, that was a nice tweet by Kerry Clark. We've won four championships in numerous Final Four. You got to take the medicine. And, you know, Duke, I felt like I didn't think they'd make the Final Four. I had them bowing out in the Elite Eight, but, you know, they did not show up. And I just felt like all year they had trouble guarding people. And I didn't think it wasn't one of Coach K's tougher teams. You know, I think they're going to have some post presence coming in with Okafor. I do think Parker will probably leave. He was very distraught after losing, but since he's going to be a top three pick, I'm sure he'll probably go to the NBA. But they have Jahlil Okafor coming in from Chicago, 6'11".
Right.
And they've got a very good Tyson Parker, a pure point guard coming in because Quinn Cook's been kind of up and down. So then they've got Grayson Lambert, a very good off guard coming in from Florida. So they've got a great recruiting class coming in. They should have a great team. Yeah, if Parker came back, they'd have the number one team in America, but that's not likely. But I think Duke will be very good, and I think they'll use it as a stepping stone. I mean, obviously it can happen to anybody, any great coach. And I think I think right now the NCAA tournament's been pretty crazy. I don't know how y'all's brackets are. I still have my Final Four live, Michigan State, Louisville, Florida and Arizona. I have Michigan State beating Arizona in the finals, but it's been an entertaining tournament. I thought honestly the best game of the first weekend was Wichita State and Kentucky. I thought that was a high level basketball game. I thought, you know, Kentucky, to their credit, rose to the occasion.
Yep.
And beat a very, very good Wichita State team.
Is the surprise of the tournament to you, and it's not to me, but I wanted to know, is the surprise of the tournament Tennessee?
Oh, yeah, I felt like I had them beating Iowa. I actually had them getting to the game. I had Duke putting them out, but I was not surprised they beat Mercer. They remind me of Wimp Sanderson's Alabama teams on the front line, guys. They've got
they're bulls.
You've got
two guys that are bulls, yeah.
Stokes and Maimon are beasts. And then they have an athletic off guard in McRae, who's played at a very high level. They finally get some point guard play, and you know it wouldn't even shock me if they get to the regional finals. I thought they were underseeded. I thought they were better than an 11 seed. I thought they put the biggest ass whooping on Alabama anybody did all season in Coleman Coliseum. They beat them by 17 points, and it may not even have been that close, really. I watched some of it. It was just a mismatch. And like I say, I think Konzo Martin's done a very good job. You know, you had 34,000 Tennessee fools signing a petition trying to get him out of there, and now his name's coming up at Marquette, so he might try to cash in. But,
serve their ass right. That would serve their ass right.
Wouldn't it just? Because, I mean, it has been – and I hate Tennessee, but, my God, they've been playing good basketball. I have to give it all back to Konzo Martin, yeah.
And then the Richardson kid had 26, you know, against Mercer. So they're getting balanced scoring. And I think Quanzo, he's from the Gene Katie tree. You know, his teams are ugly at times, but they play hard and they defend, and they're a tough out. And I just think hopefully Tennessee will wise up and make sure they keep him, because Bruce is gone to never return to do a three-year run at Auburn and probably, you know, end up at a basketball school. But we'll see. I mean, obviously, I'm still happy with how the whole thing worked out, because I think it's going to make the SEC step up in basketball, Alabama included. So, you know, it's definitely going to turn the heat up on Anthony Grant even more. And if he does not get the job done, then Alabama's got to go big game hunting. And to me, the top of the list has got to be my guy who got beat this past weekend and had the quote of the tournament. You know, he said, and I put it in my phone, he said, "Wolves do not fret over the opinions of sheep."
Yeah.
And I think, awesome. You know, I think Greg Marshall should be the number one guy
saying with you for the entire season. So Greg Marshall's my guy, too, and that was one of the great games I've ever seen. Well, guys, we're about to run out of time, and I want to remind the listeners that we will be at A-Day. Bands will be set up. I think Big Head Chuck will be up with some of the best barbecue you will ever put in your mouth. Looking forward to having everybody come by and see us there on University directly. Catty Corner to Denny Chimes. As we process ourselves for another year of Alabama football. Boy, what a fun show, guys. Legend brought the lumber, had fun with I-Man and Phyllis. Great segment with Carrie all the way through. And then, of course, Drew, you're absolute gold. Can't say enough about how much you bring to the program.
And Drew, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And Drew, Coach Grant's alma mater, Dayton, another surprise in this tournament.
Yeah, Archie Miller will be on
they
the list,
Ohio State got blown on that. That guy got drilled going to the basket and didn't get any free throws.
Absolutely not. He did say to contact himself. He got just what he deserved.
Oh, oh, I love it. Bam
that
Radio.
You're supposed to swallow the whistle, and they did, and good for them.
Oh, he got
it. Hey, you got to love the Miller coaching tree, guys. Sean Miller is one of my favorites, too. He would have been on my list if he'd stayed at Xavier, but you knew he was going to do better than that. He's done a great job at Arizona, and I think he's got a great basketball team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they won the national championship.
There you go. Roll Tide, everybody.
Roll Tide, guys. Tide.